ಸ್ವಯಂ ವಿಶ್ವಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿಪ್ರಾಜಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯಚರಣ ಅರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಜಯಂ ನಿತ್ಯಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿಪ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಅನಂದಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶೀಲ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಗುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನಕಿ ವೃಂದಾವನ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಾಯಪುರ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೌರ್ ಪ್ರೇಮನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಂಗ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ನಮಾಮ ಶುಭದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪ್ರಸಾಯ ಭೂದಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮದಿ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತೀ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಜಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಸಂಸಾರ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮಗ್ನಂ ದೀನಂ ಮಾಂ ಕರುಣಾನಿಧೇ ಕರ್ಮಗ್ರಾಹ ಗೃಹೀತಾಂಗಂ ಮಾಮುದ್ಧರ ಭವಾರ್ಣವ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವದಾಖ್ಯೋಯಂ ಪ್ರತ್ಯಕ್ಷ ಕೃಷ್ಣಮೇವ ಹಿ ಸ್ವೀಕೃತೋಸಿ ಮಯಾ ನಾಥ ಮುಕ್ತ್ಯರ್ಥಂ ಭವಸಾಗರೇ ಮನೋರಥೇ ಮದೀಯೋಯಂ ಸಫಲಾ ಸರ್ವದಾ ತ್ವಯಾ ನಿರ್ವಿಘ್ನೇನೈವ ಕರ್ತವ್ಯಂ ದಾಸೋಹಂ ತವ ಕೇಶವ ಭವೇ ಭವೇ ಯಥಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಪಾದಯೋರ್ಸವ ಜಾಯದೇ ತಥಾ ಕುರುಷ್ವ ದೇವೇಶ ನಾದಸ್ತ್ವಂ ನೋ ಯದ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಯಸ್ಯ ಸರ್ವಪಾಪ ಪ್ರಣಾಶನಂ ಪ್ರಣಾಮೋ ದುಃಖ ಶಮನ ತಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಂ ಪರಂ ಜನ್ಮಾದ್ಯಸ್ಯ ಯದೋನ್ವಯಾದಿದರದಸ್ ಚಾರ್ತೇಷ್ವಭಿಜ್ಞಸ್ವರಾನ್ ತೇನೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಹೃದಾಯ ಆದಿಗವೈ ಮುಹ್ಯಂತಿ ಎಲ್ ಸೂರಯ ತೇಜೋವಾರಿಮೃದಂ ಯಥಾ ವಿನಿಮಯೋ ಯತ್ರ ತ್ರಿಸರ್ಗೋ ಮೃಷಾ ಧಾಮ್ನಾ ಸ್ವೇನ ಸದಾ ನಿರಸ್ತಗುಹಗಂ ಸತ್ಯಂ ಪರಂ ಧೀಮಹಿ ಧರ್ಮ ಪ್ರೋಜ್ಜಿತ ಗೈದವೋತ್ರ ಪರಮೋ ನಿರ್ಮಲ್ಸರಾಣಾಂ ಸದಾಂ ವೇದ್ಯಂ ವಾಸ್ತವಮತ್ರ ವಸ್ತು ಶಿವದಂ ತಾಪತ್ರಯೋನ್ಮೂಲನಂ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವತೇ ಮಹಾಮುನಿ ಕೃತೇ ಕಿಂ ವಾವರೈರೀಶ್ವರ ಸದ್ಯೋ ಹೃದ್ಯವರುದ್ಯದೇತ್ರ ಕೃತಿಭಿ ಶುಶ್ರೂಷುಭೀತಲ್ಕ್ಷಣಾಲ್ ನಿಗಮಗಲ್ಪದರೋರ್ಗಲಿದಂ ಫಲಂ ಶುಕಮುಖಾತ್ ಅಮೃತದ್ರವ ಸಂಯುತಂ ಪಿಬದ ಭಾಗವತಂ ರಸಮಾಲಯಂ ಮುಹುರಹೋ ರಸಿಗಾ ಭುವಿ ಭಾವುಗಾಃ ಸಚಿದಾನಂದರೂಪಾಯ ವಿಶ್ವೋಲ್ಪತ್ಯಾದಿ ಹೇದವೇ ತಾಪತ್ರಯ ವಿನಾಶಾಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಯಂ ನುಮಃ ಯಂ ಪ್ರವ್ರಜಂತಮನುಭೇದಮಭೇದಕೃತ್ಯಂ ದ್ವೈವಾಯನೋ ವಿರಹಕಾದರಮಜ್ಜುಹಾವ ಪುತ್ರೇದಿದನ್ಮಯದಯತ್ತರವೋಭಿನೇದು ತಂ ಸರ್ವಭೂತಹೃದಯಂ ಮುನಿಮಾನದೋಸ್ಮಿ ಯಸ್ವಾನುಭಾವಮಖಿಲಶ್ರುತಿಸಾರಮೇಕಂ ಅಧ್ಯಾತ್ಮದೀಪಂ ಅದಿತಿದೀರ್ಷದಾಂ ತಮೋಂಧಂ ಸಂಸಾರಿಣಾಂ ಕರುಣಯಾಃ ಪುರಾಣಗುಹ್ಯಂ ತಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಸೂನು ಉಪಯಾಮಿ ಗುರುಂ ಮುನೀನಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವೀಂ ಸರಸ್ವತೀಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇತ್ ಕಮನೀಯ ಕಿಶೋರಮುಗ್ಧಮೂರ್ತೈ ಕಳವೇಣುಕ್ವನಿದಾದೃದಾನನೇಂದೋಃ ಮಮ ಉವಾಜಿ ವಿಜೃಂಭದಾಂ ಮುರಾರೇ ಮಧುರೀಂ ನ ಕಣಿಗಾವಿ ಕಾವಿ ಗಾವಿ ನಮಃ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಉಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪ್ರಸಾಯ ಭೂದಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮದಿ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನ್ ಇದಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತೀ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಜಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಶ್ರೀಮಲ್ ಗುರುಚರಣಾರವಿಂದಾಭ್ಯಾಂ ನಮಃ ವಂದೇ ನಂದವ್ರಜ ಸ್ತ್ರೀಣಾಂ ಪಾದರೇಣುಮಭೀಷ್ಟಶ ಯಾಸಾಂ ಹರಿಗತೋದ್ಗೀತಂ ಪುನಾದಿ ಭುವನತ್ರಯಂ ಗೋವೀ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಪರಮಾನವೇ ನಮಃ ಪೀತಾಂಬರಂ ಗರವಿರಾಜಿತ ಶಂಖಚಕ್ರಂ ಕೌಮೋದಗೀ ಸರಸಿಜಂ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಮುದ್ರಂ രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വതാലയേശമനിശം പ്രതിഭാവയാമി. കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണു ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ. ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം. ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീ ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീ അമ്പ ത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവദ്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണി. നമോസ്തു തേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ. പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകവാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമ. സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത്. വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും. ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥജല ഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതി കൃപേണ വഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുല. അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണ ഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സൗതീർണക്കലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ. പാരാശര്യവജ സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം. ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഃ പേബീയമാനം മുദ ഭൂയാത് ഭാരത പങ്കജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതി ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്വന്മന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർ വേദൈ സാംഗപദൈ ക്രമ ഉപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തി യം സാമഗാഃ. ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദമാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം. ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. യോന്ന പ്രവിശ്യ മമ വാചമിമാം പ്രസുപ്തം സഞ്ജീവയത്യഖില ശക്തിധര സ്വധാം അന്യാംശഹസ്തചരണശ്രവണാം തുകാദീൻ പ്രാണാൻ നമോ ഭഗവതേ പുരുഷായ തുഭ്യം. ഭൂതേർ മഹദ്ഭൃഗേ മാ പുരോ വിഭുർ നിർമായ ശൈതേയതമൂഷു പുരുഷ ഭുക്തി ഗുണാൻ ഷോഡശ ഷോഡശാത്മകം സോലം കൃഷീഷ്ട ഭഗവാൻ ഭജാംസി മേ. പ്രഹ്ലാദ നാരദ പരാശര പുണ്ഡരീക വ്യാസം പരീഷ ശുഖ ശൗനക ഭീഷ്മദാഭ്യാൻ രുക്മാംഗദാർജുന വസിഷ്ഠ വിഭീഷണാന്യാൻ പുണ്യാനി മാൻ പരമഭാഗവതാൻ സ്മരാമി. അംബരീഷ മഹാരാജ്, ഓൾ ഹിസ് സെൻസസ് വേർ കംപ്ലീറ്റ്ലി അബ്സോർബ്ഡ് ഇൻ കൃഷ്ണ. ആൻഡ് ഹൗ ദേ വർ അബ്സോർബ്ഡ് ഇൻ കൃഷ്ണസ് ഇൻ കൃഷ്ണ ഹൗ ഓൾ ഹിസ് സെൻസസ് വർ അബ്സോർബ്ഡ് ഇൻ കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് സ്പോക്കൺ ഇൻ ദോസ് ത്രീ വേഴ്സസ് ടു 18th, 19th, and 20th. ഹൗ ടു അബ്സോർബ് ഓൾ ദ സെൻസസ് ഇൻ Krishna's Krishna consciousness, in other words, Bhagavad Param. Savai mana Krishna pada aravindayor vajamsi vaigunda gunanu varnani karau harer mandira marjanadishu shudim chagara achudasal kathothaye mukundalinga alaya darshane drishau talbrutya gatra sprashanga sangam ghanam jatal pada saroja saurabham shrimat tulasyam rasanam tadarpide. പാദൌ ഹരേ ക്ഷേത്രപദാനുസർപ്പണേ ശിരോ ഹൃഷീകേശ പദാഭിവന്ദനേ കാമം ച ദാസ്യാന്നതു കാമകാമ്യയാം യതുത്തമ ശ്ലോകജനാശ്രയ ഹരി. വി സോ യെസ്റ്റർഡി ദ ഫസ്റ്റ് വേഴ്സ് ഹൗ ദ മൈൻഡ് വാസ് അബ്സോർബ്ഡ് mind was absorbed in Krishna, and morning, daytime, lunchtime, evening time, all remembering Krishna's Leela, different pastimes. Then we saw how through the Vagindriyam, the tongue, with that he refrained from discussing the material life, completely absorbed in Krishna, and thereby the mind as well. So the tongue and the mind were completely absorbed in Krishna. And then we saw how with the hand, because it is the best of all the karmendriyam, senses of action, with that karmendriyam he absorbed in Krishna. This is all we have seen yesterday. So in the 19th verse you can see there that Mugunda Lingalaya Darshane Drishau Tadbhritya Gatras Prashenga Sangamam. Looking at Krishna's temples everywhere, wherever temples are there, going and seeing them, and remembering the installed deities in those temples, and sitting there looking at the deities. And that is the worship through the eyes. Using the eyes for worshipping Krishna means seeing Krishna's forms at different temples installed, and great temples, big temples, where without giving trouble to others, staying aloof from everybody, and also observing the deity, seeing the deity. That is the observation with the eye. If you allow the eyes to go to the world, it will drag us into the world. The eyes have got that nature. That external objects, if eyes find pleasure in that, in the world outside, then it will drag us also into that. So instead, simply seeing the deities, and that way getting attracted to the form of Krishna. To the form of Krishna. So, the beauty of the sense objects outside, and that will be lost if one get attracted to the form in the temple. So that is the one he is saying here. Mugunda Lingalaya Darshane Drishau. Krishna's forms at different temples, observing them, looking at them, that way withdrawing the eyes from looking at the world and the sense objects. If we look at objects in the world outside with interest, with attachment, and if we find satisfaction from that or taste for that, then it will drag us into material existence. These are all subtle things, but if you think about it, you can see the reality also. Any beauty, eyes have got a problem. Wherever it finds beauty, it will stay there. Wherever it finds beauty, it will go and look at it, and it will be very difficult to take the attention away from that. So that is why we have to be extremely careful with the eyes. If it finds attraction in any beautiful object, its nature is to get stuck there. It will not come out from there unless it finds another beautiful object more beautiful than this. This is the way the eye functions. So this eye is, so external beauty is not beauty, but if you are able to see that beauty as Krishna's beauty, in that case, one has to think like this. If we find beauty elsewhere in the world outside, that object has got its beauty because of Krishna's presence in that. If one is able to see it like that, then it will help. But normally it doesn't happen that way. We get simply see things, only the Namarupam we see. We don't see Krishna's presence in the Rupam. So, So, to see the beauty in anything as Krishna's beauty and able to enjoy it in that way, recognizing Krishna's beauty in every beautiful object in this world. And that is the worship with the eye. Not only the beauty of the deities in the temple, that is there, but apart from that, wherever we see beauty in this world, anywhere, actually we should see that, like Himalayas, oceans, big mountains, all that is Krishna's beauty is present in them. Forests. So, if you recognize Krishna's presence in that and worship them in that attitude, then that is the worship with the eye. So, the temple architecture, beautiful carvings of the deities in the temple, and not only that, all other deity forms, what is in the temple, you find it's not only the main deity, but so many pillars and so many corridors, everywhere different types of pastimes are carved for the people to see. And all this you can see in the big temples, big huge corridors with thousands of pillars and different places in the temple, carved with different forms of the deities and deities' pastimes and things. All this is to remind us of the Krishna's beauty, and that way the eyes gets its satisfaction from that. So, many beautiful pastimes are carved in the deities for this purpose. So, that is what he is saying. Tal Bhrityagartha Sparshenga Sangamam. Next one. That with attachment, Sakti. Tad Bhrityagartha Sparshenga Sangamam. Angasangam. Angasangam means our bodily parts making contact with them. So our sparsham, sparsham means touch, sense of touch. If you touch those different forms in the deities with the hand, then it is the worship of Krishna through your sense of touch, through the sense of touch. So, and that will awaken the bhakti in our heart when we touch the deity's feet or deity's forms, different carvings. When we touch with our hands, it awakens the bhakti. So, in a similar way, tal brityagatra sparshenga sangamam. Tal brity means Krishna's devotees, touching them. And only mahalpas, not everybody go and hugging everyone, thinking that they're all devotees. That's not what it is meant. Mahalpas, if we get an opportunity to touch them, and by touching them, you get an opportunity for sense of touch used for developing bhakti. So this is how to explaining the different senses, how they were used in developing. Ambarish Maharaj has developed Krishna consciousness that way. Great mahalpas, great personalities. So, so touching them with our sense of touch, sparshanendriyam, is also Ishwaradhana. Then, granam cha talpada saroja saurabhe. Flowers offered to Krishna, tulsi leaves, all these things, able smelling them, that is absorbing the nose in Krishna's service. Similarly, all the flowers that's been offered to Krishna, garlands, flowers, everything, and their smell, smelling them. That is the service, that is the using the nose for Krishna service, right? So, similarly, if you cannot do that, if you don't have that, whatever flowers you find in the world, beautiful flowers, recognizing Krishna's presence in them, that is also considered to be worship with the nose. So, that is the vidhi with the nose. Then, Srimattu granam ja talpada saroja saurabhai Srimal tulasyam rasanam tadarpide. Similarly, next, Similarly, only accepting Krishna's prasadam, and that is the that is using the rasanendriyam, that means the taste, sense of taste, in Krishna's service. Just taking only Krishna prasadam. That is using the tongue in Krishna's service, right? Whatever it may be, only to make sure that we only eat prasadam, Krishna prasadam, right? Or if anything comes to us, sometimes it may not be possible to receive prasadam from the temple all the time. Even in that situation, whatever comes for us to as food for us, for our survival, offer that to Krishna's holy name, using holy name, offer that to Krishna and enjoy it. So that becomes prasadam. So this Dashanami sannyasis, who are the 10 major sannyasi traditions, Saraswati, Puri, all the Giri, all of them are in that tradition. There are 10 of them mentioned in the Bhagavatam also. Also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it's mentioned that all of them, what they do, the Shanami sannyasis, they go begging, and when they get chapatis or dal, whatever bhiksha they receive, and there are many annakshetrams like that in holy places, like in Ganga River banks, Haridwar, Hrishikesh, all these places. So they offer them to Ganga Devi, and they sprinkle some Ganga water on the bhiksha what they have received, and that way then offer it to their Ishtadevada, and they take it as prasadam. So that's the way they make the offerings, the Dashanami sannyasis. So anything what is offered to Krishna in our mind, it becomes prasadam. That's the principle. Within our mind, if we have given that offer to Krishna, then it becomes prasadam. So sannyasis, they do offer to Ganga River or the spiritual master, or to their Ishtadevada form. All of that is prasadam. And they will also offer part of it to whoever comes to visit them at that time. That is their bhiksha system, bhiksha sampradaya, right? So, officially, offering to the to get the prasadam from the temple everywhere may not be possible. And it is not compulsory also that you should only eat prasadam from the temple. It's not compulsory like that, right? That is only possible for those who are living at the temple. But sometimes it is not possible to get the naivedyam or the offering given from the temple, right? So whatever we receive as food, offer it to Krishna and take it. That is the only rule related to that, right? If we have offered something to Krishna in our mind, then that has become purified. Within our mind, if we have offered anything to Krishna, it's purified. And and that is why Krishna says in the Ekadasya Skandam, Bhaktena Mama Vairyabhi. He says, with bhakti, if you offer anything to me, even if it is water, it has been purified. So, so here, Mugunda Lingalaya Darshane Drishav Talbhritya Gatras Prashenga Sangam Granamja Talpada Saroja Saurabhe Srimat Tulasyam Rasanam Tadarpide. In this way, worship Krishna in the temple, in the deities, and touching, sense of touch, sense of the nose and tongue, in this way all senses engage in Krishna's service. And this way Ambarish Maharaj was completely absorbed in the Ishvara Upasana. And he was enjoying this to the maximum, this process. So different devotees have different nature, vasana in them accordingly, right? Look at the next verse. Padau hare kshetra padano sarpane shirau hrishikesha padabhi vandane kamam jadasena du kama kamyaya yadottama shloka jana ashrayaradhi. Krishna's temples, going to the temples, circumambulating the temple. And he used his legs for that purpose. Walking to the temple and circumambulating the temple, deities, right? Not for seeing the beautiful scenery outside, right? So, he always walked to the temple, right? Shastram says so. One should walk to the temple. One should not go in SUVs and BMWs and all. Of course, today that is what happens. But Shastram says one should go to the temple walking, not any other way, right? If you go by vehicle to the temple, you are supposed to park the vehicle far away from the temple and then walk from there to the temple, right? That is the etiquette. That's the proper system. And once you have started your journey to the temple, till you get there, you should remember Krishna by chanting the holy name and or remembering Krishna in some way, sotram, studi, all that. And in that way, Bhagavan Mayatvam. Bhagavan Mayatvam means that complete absorption in mind before we go into the temple, right? And not to engage in other kinds of topics of discussion, right? So, these installed deities at the temple, one should be seen as Krishna's presence there. And in that way, fully absorbed in that, one should walk into the temple. And that is what he is saying here. Padau hare kshetra padanu sarpane. One should engage one's feet in serving Krishna. Or when you go to the temple, circumambulate the temple as many times as possible. That is the circumambulation. Is that kshetra padanu sarpane. Then when we're going to places where Mahalpas are living, going to their ashram, walking there, that is also Ishwararadhana. That's also Ishwararadhana. Walking to their places, to their ashrams, right? Offering obeisances to them and circumambulating them, that is also considered to be the service with the legs, service for the legs, right? And doing some service for them, that is also padau hare kshetra kamam cha dasyena edu kama kamyaya, looking after their requirements, whatever small way it can be done, and that is all part of considered to be part of the worship of Krishna by Ambarish Maharaj, right? Similarly, offering obeisances to Krishna. Shirau Krishikesha Padabhi Vandanav. That with the shiras head, with the head, touching Krishna's feet. It may not be possible to touch the deities, but touch the floor, assuming that you are touching Krishna's feet. In that way. So, whatever installed deity is there, offering full obeisances and pranams to Krishna. Then, remembering all famous devotees who have inspired you in Krishna consciousness. Remembering those great personalities from whom you have heard about Krishna consciousness and who have given you some input into your Krishna consciousness, or great devotees who have affected you in life, remembering them. That is also mentions here. Kamam ja dasya enadu kama kamyam. That is all considered to be worship of Krishna with the head. And similarly, all living entities in this world, seeing them, Krishna's manifestations in them, and offering respects to them. So, kamam cha dasye nadu kama kamyaya, he says there, right? What was his desire? Bhagavad dasyam, wants to serve Krishna, right? Means no desire for sense gratification, right? Kama kamyaya means that desire for sense gratification completely taken out from inside, right? Only Krishna service, that's all in him. So, if you do like the way Ambarish has done, then gradually all senses will come under control. And we will develop firm bhakti, devotion in Krishna and his devotees. It will naturally happen if we practice this process, right? Yes, uttama shloka janashraya radhi. That not only in Krishna, all senses offer to Krishna service, and if we serve like that, with that, not only in Krishna bhakti will develop, we will develop bhakti for Krishna's devotees as well. Then, next line, next verse. Evam sada karma kalapam almana paredhi yajne bhagavat yathoksha je sarvalma bhavam vidadhan mahim imam tanishta vipra vihida shashasaham evam sada karma kalapam almana paredhi yajne bhagavat yathoksha je sarvalma bhavam vidadhan mahim imam tanishta vipra vihida shashasaham. One word you will see there, sarvalma bhavam. That is the goal. Goal is sarvalma bhavam. What is that? All karmam performed for Krishna. Everything. With the senses, mind, body, everything. And when sarva karmam, all karmam is performed, for whom? Sarva yajna bhaladhadava. One who gives the results of all sacrifices. One who is beyond our senses, and when everything offered to him, he maintained in that way sarvatma bhavam. Sarvatma bhavam means that there is only Krishna present here. There is nothing else. That means elevating namarupam, the vision what we have now as namarupam must leave us, go away. And we have to bring Krishna into everything. And that is what is called sarvatma bhavam. Nothing exists here except Krishna. But to get that realization, that takes time. So, Ambarisha Maharaj used this process of worshipping the deity, worshipping the devotees, and engaging all senses and the mind in Krishna's service. In this way, he developed what is known as Sarvalpa Bhavam. That Sarvalpa Bhavam is the goal. He's saying here, Sarvalpa Bhavam vidadan mahimimam tannishta viprabhida shamsaha. Shashasaha, right? So in this way, all the karmam, that means, he says here, pare adhiyajne bhagavat yathokshaje, evam sada karma kalabam almanam. All these activities are called karma kalabam, kriya kalabam, bhakti. It is called, it will discuss in the Ekadasha Skandam 27th chapter. Krishna discusses that. So, in this way, all the karmam and Krishna, who is worshipped in all the yajnam, yagam, everything, but he is beyond all the yajnam, and he offered everything to the yajna purusha, who is beyond the yajnams, and who carries all the aishwaryam, viryam, vishasa, shri, jnanam, vairagyam, all the great qualities. Right, and that way he developed this sarvatma bhavam. Sarvatma bhavam is the most important thing, right? What is sarvatma bhavam means? Sarvatma bhavam means everything is Krishna. Everything is Krishna here, right? One who gets that bhavam inside, drida bhavam inside, then whatever that Ambarish Maharaj who got that, then whatever he was doing with his different senses, karma kalabam, different karma what he was doing, he offered all that with this sarvalma bhavam to please Krishna, as an offering to Krishna, right? Then, what is his position? Evam sada karma kalabam altmana. Karma kalabam it is. Karma kalabam means senses of action, all senses of action. We are engaged in Krishna service, karma kalabam, in that way. And therefore, pare thiyatye bhagavat yathokshate, offered to Krishna who is the adhishtadva devada of all the yajnams. And in that way, taking the advice from Mahatmas, according to their instructions, he protected this planet, the whole planet, because he was the emperor of the planet, right? In this way, Ishvara Upasana he performed and never deviated from his responsibility. He did all these things, but at the same time he was maintaining he was the emperor of the whole world, right? So, under the instructions from Mahatmas, depending on their advice, he did the administration. He conducted the administration very well. Everyone was happy with his administration, right? So, his administration was also a process of worship of Krishna. His administration also. So, and that is all included in that word, sarvatma bhava. Sarvatma bhavam is the most important thing, right? What that means is, his administration was also a Krishna conscious activity, spiritual activity. Administration also a spiritual activity. So, what it means is that Andaryami, Krishna is present inside as Andaryami, within himself, Ambarish Maharaj. And that same Andaryami is present in everyone, in all living entities. With this firm conviction, Ambarish used all his senses and all his activities, sensual activities, as an offering to Krishna. That way. That is what that means, right? Evam sada karma kalabam altmana pare adhiyatye bhagavati adokshate sarvalma bhavam. That sarvalma bhavam in him, right? So this understanding that Krishna is present in everyone as Andaryami, this is what happens to a devotee who engages, offers everything to Krishna. Eventually it will come. That understanding will come in due course of time. It may take time. But if we follow this process, what is Ambarish has shown from Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayo, that absorbing in Krishna's service one's mind, senses, everything, in due course of time, Sarvalma Bhavam will come to him. So, and the Andaryami present inside is present in everyone as their Andaryami as well, and that's him, Krishna. So, so in this way, with that firm understanding, Krishna, who is worshipped through all the yagam, yajnam and all that, he offered everything to Krishna with this sarvalma bhav. So, that is how he conducted the administration. Being a kshatriya, his swadharmam is also administration of the kingdom. Being a kshatriya, that is swadharmam. So, even the swadharmam, he made it as a Krishna conscious activity. Surrender, offer to Krishna in that way, right? With samarpana buddhi, like we say in the Bhagavata Dharma. Yeah. Kayena vajamana sendriyarva. The same thing he practically applied in his life and made it happen. That's all. So, which to whom did he make this offer? He is always conscious of this one thing, Pratyagalpa inside, as Antaryami, present inside, and one who is present in the whole creation, that pure Sachidananda Brahman, it is for him he made this offering. And that Paramatma, who is Adhishtadra Devada, who is available to us at the moment in the form of the deities in the temple or in all the other living entities present here, that Sachidananda Paramatma, who is present as Antaryami or Pratyagalpa Chaitanyam, and that is where our karmam was offered. Like Krishna says, isn't it? The same thing in the Bhagavad Gita. Tameva sharanam gacha sarvabhavena bharata. Pointing out to Antaryami inside. Krishna says this in the 18th chapter. Ishvara. Yeah. So, it is Ishvara within the heart. Sarvabhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi. The stress is there. Ishvara sarvabhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi. Brahmayan sarvabhudani yantrarudhani mayaya tameva sharanam gacha. Take shelter there. That is what is spoken here. That is more the stress is. Tameva sharanam gacha sarvabhavena bharata tal prasada param shantim sthanam prapsyasi shashvatam. So you can see what Ambarish did was exactly what was spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? So, remember this, that just like a horse is controlled by the rein, we control the horses by the rein. Similarly, it is not by a God who is sitting somewhere else and controlling us from there. No, that is not what Bhagavad Gita says, nor Bhagavatam says. Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam is saying here that in some planet somewhere far away from here, sitting there and controlling us from there, that's not what is spoken. Right here inside us, as sitting as Antaryami, Pratyagalpa Chaitanyam, and controlling every jiva from inside, who is present in all living entities, but at the same time, who is not affected by anything what is happening in our gross body or subtle body. He is present inside, but he is not affected by anything what is happening to our gross body or the subtle body. But at the same time, by whose presence all the senses, subtle body operates, works, and engages all our senses as remaining as Antaryami inside, and allow the senses to engage with the world and the sense objects. In this way, he worshipped Krishna. So his understanding comes from Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam knowledge. He is not saying a God who is sitting far away somewhere else and controlling us here. Right here, in every body, present inside as Antaryami, Pratyagalpa Chaitanyam, allowing that jiva to interact with the world and engage its senses and sense objects, giving the power for the senses to work, and the subtle body to work, and after engaging in karmam, whatever results are coming from that, giving the results to that jiva according to its prarabdham, all this control is here, Antaryami inside. And he had that recognition very much, right? So, and that is called Sarvalpa Bhavam. So, remember, notice that word, it is very important. Sarvalpa Bhavam vidhanmahi mimam. That sarvalpa bhavam means this, being inside us as Antaryami, not only me, in everyone, present as Antaryami, Pratyagalpa Chaitanyam, and controlling our activities all the time, through our senses, subtle body, gross body, everything, and giving the power for them to operate, otherwise it cannot work, nothing will work, is it not? We have seen many times how Antaryami's presence is required for subtle body to function, gross body to work, and the senses to work, everything. And at the same time, recognizing that and seeing this way, all living entities, jivas are working on that level and offering all the results that's coming from this is bhakti combined with karma yoga. Or in other words, Bhagavata Dharma. So Bhagavata, that's why I was saying yesterday that Surya Vamsham, if you take the solar dynasty, Krishna's main appearance, Surya Vamsham, is Lord Ramachandra. And the main devotee is Ambarish. Similarly, we will see Krishnavadaram also, there is a devotee like that. We'll come to that later. So, Krishnavadaram in Somavamsham, Ramavadaram in Suryavamsham, both had famous devotees like this who represented totally Krishna consciousness in all levels. Right? So, so he conducted his administration with this Sarvalpa Bhava. That's how his administration was, right? And because he had been given advice by Mahabhagavadas, they gave the instructions to him, advice to him, and honoring them and respecting them, taking their instructions seriously, he conducted the administration. So as he said yesterday, Brahmam and Kshatram. Kshatriyas rule, advice from the Brahmanas, right? So he conducted this, even his administration, as a worship, as Bhagavata Dharma. Imagine that. Doing administration of the whole planet as a Bhagavata Dharma. He conducted that. So, Sarvalpa Bhava. So, he conducted all this, right? So, in other words, Krishna is present in everyone as their very soul, Antaryami inside. And he is the same Antaryami, is the Adhishtadra Devada in all the Yajnams also. Adhishtadra Devada in Yajnam. And in him, all karmam was offered. And in that way, under the instructions from the Mahatmas, Bhagavadas or great devotees, Brahmanas, according to their instructions, he conducted the administration very well. Next verse. Eje Ashwamedhai Adhiyajnam Ishwaram Mahavibhutyobhijad Angadakshinai Tadir Vasishtasida Gaudamadhibir Dhanvanyabhi Srodha Srodha Madhasau Saraswadim Eje Ashwamedhai Adhiyajnam Ishwaram Mahavibhutyobhijad Angadakshinai Tadir Vasishtasida Gaudamadhibir Dhananyabhi Srodhamasau Saraswadim. Due to that, the opulences in the planet increased considerably due to Ambarisha Maharaj's administration. The opulences increased so much that, why? Because the advice who gave the advice to him, Vasishta, Asita, Gautama, they were the great personalities, the great rishis. Due to them, due to their advices, he decided to perform Ashwamedha Yajnam. Many Ashwamedham he performed. And many times he performed this in Dhanva Desham. Dhanvanyabhi Srodhamasau Saraswati, which is an area where Saraswati River is flowing. But in that area he performed this sacrifices. Yeah. So he used Ashwamedham sacrifices for his worship, right? And due to these opulences, Aishwaryam, right, he spent lavishly for all the sacrifices, very lavishly, right? More than what was required, right? And because of that, all the Ashwamedham sacrifices were very opulent, conducted very opulent, right? Similarly, the Ritviks who performed the sacrifices, they were given lavishly. And in each yajnam, Ashwamedha yajnam, different kriyas were involved, kriya vishesham, right? There were different kriyas, different parts of the sacrifices. They were also conducted very opulent way, right? And similarly, all the rishis who were present there, they were also given dakshina, in large quantities, in bulk, right? Their names are mentioned, Vasishta, Asita, Gautama, these rishis, right? And they were the karmigatvam, they were supervising the karma, right? And at that time, Saraswati River, where there was shortage of water, and against that, on the western side of that, where there was shortage of water, there he conducted this Ashwamedha Yagam many, many, many times. Look at the next verse. Yasya kradushu girvanai sadasya kritijo janaha tulyarubache animisha vidrishyanda suvasasam. In that yajnam, in Yagam, the priests, which we call as the Ritviks here, and all the Sadasyas who are present there, they look like demigods, and they were wearing such expensive clothes, and they were looking very beautiful, and seeing them was a surprise to everybody. Everyone looking so opulent who are conducting that sacrifices, right? So, so in his sacrifices, Ambarish Maharaj's sacrifices, Devas came personally and received the offering. And because they had come and mingled, Devas came and mingled with all the priests who were there. One could not recognize who is who, whether they were the Devas who had come or they were the priests who were conducting the sacrifice. Because they were dressed so well that when Devas came, nobody could notice the difference between the two. So they were mingling so freely, Devas as well as the Ritviks and the Rishis, all of them who were present there, right? So what they're saying here, who is Rishi and who is Deva and who is Ritvik? Nobody could notice it. Nobody could identify them separately. To such an extent, they were opulent. All of them looked so opulent, right? So, Rishis normally doesn't dress like that. But these Rishis, because they were given such opulent clothes and jewelry by Ambarish Maharaj, they were wearing that, and therefore they also looked very effulgent along with the Devas. And Devas had come there dressed very well to receive the offering for them in the sacrifice, and ultimately nobody could recognize who is a Rishi, who is a Deva, and who is a Ritvik. It just happened like that. That's what he is saying here. You see that? In the next verse, Surgona prarthido yasya anujai amarapriyaha shrinvad birubagayad bhir uttama shloka cheshtidam. That because it was like this, that Ambarisha Maharaj has elevated the people to such a level of Krishna consciousness that they were hearing about Krishna, they were hearing about his pastimes, and everyone was relishing Krishna's glories to such an extent, the population, or in other words, his subjects, Ambarish Maharaj's subjects, they didn't even want to go to heavenly planets. That stage had come. In other words, the administration was so good, king was so great, that their Krishna consciousness was so high, they haven't even desired to go to the heavenly planets. So if the subjects doesn't want to go to heavenly planets, do you think that Ambarish would like to go to heavenly planet? If the subjects' consciousness were so high, Ambarish Maharaj's subjects had such a high consciousness, because going to heavenly planets means what? The desire is still there to enjoy. Is it not? That's what it means. That is implied in that. That's what is implied in those verses. The subjects had even given up their desire to go to heavenly planets. They were so satisfied and happy under Ambarish Maharaj's administration If it is like that, Bhagavatam is asking this question, what to talk about Ambarish then? Because normally the Ambarish would have had the desire to go, and then the subjects would follow him. But subjects are supposed to follow him. But if subjects don't have the desire to go, they were so happy, which means that Ambarish has created that sort of administration that they were all satisfied. Samardhayandidan kama swarajya bhari paribhavidaha durlabham abhisiddhanam mugundam kridipashyadam. Due to spiritual advancement and self-realization and getting that happiness from self-realization, Atma Sarubanandam. Sarubanandam means happiness that is coming from the Andaryami, inside. Due to that, they felt that there is no need to go to Brahmalokam, which is normally chosen by those who are going the Krama Mukti. They will go to Brahmalokam, isn't it, before they go back to the spiritual world. So, this happiness, what you can get in the Brahmalokam, or Brahma's planet, even that was not attractive for Ambarish's subjects, King's Ambarish Maharaj's subjects. To such an extent, things have changed in Ayodhya. So, Ambarish's praja, or their subjects, they were not attracted by, even by the standard of happiness in the Brahmalokam. Even Brahmalokam, among these, in the 14 planetary systems, the highest standard is in the Brahmalokam. The material happiness, highest happiness is in the Brahmalokam. Even that was not attractive to them. So, if it is like that, what to talk about heavenly planets? Brahmalokam is higher than the heavenly planets. Even happiness of Brahmalokam was not attractive to them. So therefore, what to say about that? That's what he is saying here. Samardhayandidan kamam swarajya paribhavida swarajya paribhavida durlabham abhisiddhanam ugundam khatipashyadam. That. Did he perform this ashwamedham sacrifices to go to heavenly planets? No. He didn't. This is what happened. This is why you have to remember different kings performed ashwamedham for different reasons. But Rajarshis, like Ambarish, like Parikshit, like Yudhishthira, and like Prithu, all these great personalities, they didn't perform any sacrifice to go to heaven. That Swargalokam, that was not their goal. Their goal was purification within, for that purpose. Because this is Karma Yogam. How Karma Yogam leads into Chittashuddhi, that's what is shown here. So, his subjects also ignored heavenly planets. They had no interest there. Because why? They were all great devotees. Because of Ambarish, right? So, they were absorbed in glorifying Krishna, chanting the holy name, and completely absorbed in bhakti. And therefore, that is how they lived in this world. So, if the subjects did not want heavenly planets, then you can never, then can you say, can you not say that Ambarish had no such a desire of going to heavenly planets, right? In other words, he had no desire to go to heavenly planets. If the subjects were like this, Ambarish had, that itself is an indication that Ambarish also didn't have any desire to go to heavenly planets. Ambarish's happiness was glorifying Krishna here and chanting the holy name and completely absorbed in the bhakti. If the devotees were like that, you can imagine that the subjects also had no desire to the heavenly planets from where the devas had come. So, so that way, Ambarish Maharaj engaged, that is how he conducted all these sacrifices. Ashwamedham sacrifices was conducted in this consciousness, not desiring to go to heavenly planets, purely for the sake of developing Chittashuddhi and Bhakti in the heart. Right? Then, that leads into the next verse. So, what he is saying there is that the samardhayandidan kamam swarajya paribhavidah durlabham abhisiddhanam mukundam khatipashyadam. Ambarish's subjects, Ambarish Maharaj's subjects, they didn't want heavenly planets. On the other hand, they didn't even want the happiness of the Brahmalokam, which is the topmost planet in the universe, right? Because why did they not want it? That is what he's saying there. Why did they not want heavenly planets or the Brahmalokam? Because within their heart, the bliss that was coming from Antaryami, due to their strict following the Shastram and conducting these Ashwamedham sacrifices, due to that, Atma Swarupananda Spiranam, that is what they say. That's what that word, Swarajya Paribhavita. See that word? It's important. Sometimes you will see in certain verses, certain words used with a deep meaning behind it. Like we saw about Sarvatma Bhavam earlier in the 21st verse. Same way, in this verse, you can see that they have used Swarajya Paribhavita. Swarajya Paribhavita means, due to when you realize the self inside, Antaryami realization, when that happens, a certain amount of happiness you start experiencing is just the beginning of the process of self-realization. Swarupa Smriti, Swarupa Ananda Smarana, that means due to you realizing that you are not this body, and you start realizing that you are the Antaryami inside, when that realization comes, the bliss starts coming, flowing from there. And that is called, what is called as Swarajya Paribhavita, right? So, due to that Swarupananda Lahari, there are many words for that. Due to that, even the people who are living in the Brahmalokam, they do not get that, what you get here from the Antaryami, right? So they were so satisfied with that happiness that was coming from the Antaryami. Therefore, that was the reason why they didn't even want to go to Brahmalokam. Even Brahmalokam they were able to reject from here, right? Why? Swarajya Paribhavita. Swarajya Paribhavita. What is Swarajya means? Entering into the spiritual world within ourselves. Krishna is present inside a Antaryami, entering into him. That is Swarajya Paribhavita. The word means that. Swarajya Paribhavita. Swarajya means our own kingdom, spiritual awareness inside, right? So when Krishna is present as the Antaryami inside, the happiness that comes from there is higher than the, of course, now we can only talk about it in words. Till we experience that, we won't understand it. When they are comparing this with the happiness of the Brahmalokam. Now, we are people, we don't know Brahmalokam, we don't know Swarajya Paribhavita also. And we are comparing both. So there is a difficulty there, right, for us, because we are not experienced either of this. For us, any happiness is okay. A little relief from the suffering is good. This is our position. So when you read Bhagavatam, you have to think in a little differently. In the sense that we are talking about people who had gone so high in spiritual life, Ambarish Maharaj and his subjects, due to a personality like him, he has elevated them to such a level, most of them are feeling a happiness coming from the soul, Antaryami itself directly. They are experiencing that. And comparatively, they felt that happiness is even superior to the happiness they could get in the heavenly planets or in Lord Brahma's planet. To such an extent, they were elevated, in other words. So, because they were like that, in Brahmalokam, great personalities live. Siddhas, Siddha Purushas, they live there. Even they could not imagine the Bhoga Sukham, what they get from there, will not be attractive to the devotees of Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj subjects, right? So, this Ananda Samudram, Swarajya Paribhavita, that means the bliss that was coming from the soul, even a drop of that is more than the happiness of the Brahmalokam, what was coming from there. So, now, in the Upanishads, the happiness available in different places is compared. In this world, in the heavenly planets, in the higher planets, in Brahmalokam, they are all compared. In Taittiriya Upanishad it is spoken about it, right? And first thing is Brahmalokam, if you take. Brahmalokam has got bhogasukam. Bhogasukam means this sensual happiness. It's beyond our imagination. Why? First reason, the lifespan is very long compared to here. When we get a small taste of that sense gratification here, in this 60-70 years short lifespan here, we are willing to work so hard for that. What he's saying here is that, and you can never compare our sense gratification present in this world with what's happening in Brahmaloka because of the long lifespan they have. And the standard of bhogasukham, sense enjoyment, is also very high in Brahmalokam, right? And it is not possible in this world to have it, right? So, that bhoga sukham, what you get in the Brahma's world, Brahma's planet, is not even a drop of the sukham what you get from the self, Antaryami. This is what they're driving the point. That is why I'm saying that why self-realization? Why should one try for self-realization? Because everybody is looking for happiness in this world. But actual happiness can only come from Krishna inside. Atmanastu kamaya sarvamidam priyam bhavati. All our effort in this world to become happy is because of this reason only. That actual happiness is in Antaryami. It has to come from there. And that is the source of all the happiness. Right? So, when that ocean of happiness is inside us, how ambitious subjects will get attracted to the, when they start getting the experience of the happiness of Antaryami, how will they leave all these things and go to Brahma's planet to enjoy there? Comparatively, this happiness what we get from this Antaryami is far, far superior to the happiness what you can enjoy in the Brahmalokam. Why they have compared in the Upanishads is to prove to us that happiness what comes from the soul is the highest happiness. There is no other happiness because the very nature of the soul is bliss. Satta, Chitta, Anandam. That is the very nature of the soul. Yeah. So, neither the Brahmalokam nor the heavenly planets attracted ambitious subjects. And so, therefore, Ambarisha is naturally not at all attracted to that, right? His attraction was for bhakti in service to Krishna. And due to that, and kshatriyas are supposed to perform that Bhagavad Aradhana or Krishna service in the form of Ashwamedham. He conducted. Ashwamedham was the process what the Kshatriyas followed in them days. Next word. This great personality, Ambarish, Parama Bhagavatam, right? He was not attracted to anything and it is not surprising at all. And that is the what is spoken in the next two verses. Why it's not surprising that Ambarish was not attracted to such a great devotee that he was not attracted to anything, any sense gratification. Sa ittham bhakti yogena tapo yuktena parthiva so dharmena harim prenan sangan sarvan shaner jahau. Sa ittham bhakti yogena tapo yuktena parthiva so dharmena harim prenan sangan sarvan shaner jahau. That great personality, Ambarish Maharaj, with his austerities and with his swadharmam and with his bhakti, all these things, he pleased Krishna to such an extent. And in that process, when bhakti develops, vairagyam comes, follows. And that's what he's saying here. He had no, due to his increased bhakti, increased vairagyam came to him. He became more detached from everything. So this is a symptom of a person. These are all for devotees to understand that when bhakti develops, vairagyam comes. That is the symptom of that. Bhakti develops, vairagyam comes. When vairagyam comes, the knowledge will stay firm inside. That is the connection between bhakti, jnana, vairagyam. So that's what he's saying here. Griheshu, dareshu, suteshu, bandushu, divotamasyandana vajipatishu, achayaratna abharana ayudhadi, anandakoshe shagarodasanmatim. Then, due to this increased desire for serving Krishna and attachment to Krishna, bhakti developed to such a higher degree intensity in him. He had no attraction for palaces, home, wife, children, family, relations. Of course, obviously there's these elephants, chariots, horses, army, all of them. And similarly jewelry, expensive weapons, and so much wealth, which cannot be even accounted to that extent. He completely ignored all that. He had no interest in any of those things. So those two verses are to prove that. Yeah. So what he's saying here is that due to using all senses and the mind completely and in Krishna service and Dwadasha Vratam, what he performed, Swadharmam, he has performed Bhagavad Dharpanam, which is Bhagavad Dharmam. In this way, continuously absorbed in Krishna consciousness, right? Due to that, all asakti has gone. Vishayasakti means attachment for sense gratification. And gradually he gave up everything. And ultimately he was only seeing Krishna presence within himself and in the whole creation, in all living entities. In other words, he has reached the highest level of bhakti and jnanam, both knowledge and bhakti, devotion and knowledge. It is in that stage you see Krishna's presence in everything. And he reached that stage. He reached that state. Yeah. So at that time, he lost all his attraction for the palace, gold, wife, children, relations, elephants, chariots, and army, everything, because of the unlimited wealth what he had, and he saw that all this wealth is all useless. Loshtavat, it says there, right? He saw that as loshtavat, right? So, this is a perfection of a devotee. Devotee sees that the happiness that comes from Krishna cannot be compared with the happiness that comes from sense objects. To get that realization, it takes time. And Ambarish Maharaj, by his practice of Bhagavad Dharmam, in this way he reached that. He had no attraction, no attachment to any of the things in this world. Right? And he was not attracted by any of that. So, if it is like that, an emperor is like that, how will he manage these enemies? Emperor also has got to fight sometimes, isn't it? So it's not an easy thing, administration of a kingdom or planet at that time. And how he had enemies, Ambarish Maharaj also had enemies. How did he win over them? In this state of consciousness, how did he operate? How did he conduct his administration? How did he fight the enemies? That is the next verse. Tasmal adadharis chakram pratyaniga bhayavaham ekanda bhakti bhavena prido prithyabhirakshanam. Krishna took care of everything for him. Because his service to Krishna was such, Krishna decided to run the administration on his behalf. And therefore, Krishna sent Sudarshanam to do the job for him. This is how that relationship was with Krishna. Right? So, due to this ekanda bhakti bhavena, such a committed devotee, serious devotee, surrendered everything and finally reached the highest stage of bhakti and jnanam. The result of that was, still he was the emperor of the planet, and still in spite of that, Sudarshanam was sent by Krishna to manage the affairs. Right? In other words, it is Sudarshanam who was actually running the administration, right? So that is the important bit there in that 28th verse, right? So Hari sent his Sudarshanam. Tasmal Taddhal Harish Chakram Pratyanika Bhayavaham Ekanta Bhakti Bhavena Prizo Prithyabhirakshanam. So Sudarshanam took over the administration because Krishna was pleased with it, Ekanta Bhakti. Such a soul, great personality Ambarish was, right? And Sudarshanam came up to him and he managed the administration. Ambarish was didn't have to worry about it. Because Sudarshanam took over, Ambarish Maharaj had all the time to himself for absorbing in Krishna. Smarana. Smarana of Krishna. 24 hours. So he was relieved from his responsibility. Sudarshanam took over everything. Right? So that's what he's saying here. So, in this way, Ambarish's vairagyam was shown and his bhakti also. Both bhakti and vairagyam was shown in this way till now. Due to this vairagyam and bhakti, even brahmadandam did not work. Brahmadandam means curse from the great personalities, like in this case Durvasava Maharshi. Even Durvasava Maharshi's curse did not work on him, right? So, you can see here that the earlier in the 24th verse, you will see Surgo na prarthido yasya anujai amara priyaha shrinodbir upagayad bhiru uttama shloka cheshtidam. His subjects rejected the heavenly planets. They didn't want to go there. Therefore, naturally, if subjects have rejected heavenly planets, there is no question of Ambarish getting attracted to heavenly planets. Even the subjects didn't want it. So what to talk about the king then, right? Because he was absorbed in the Swarajya Bhava Paribhavida, absorbed in that self-realized state all the time, most of the subjects also have reached that stage of self-realization. Swarajya Paribhavida. Imagine a king is more than a king, he is a guru here now. Ambarish has come to that stage. Due to his own example, bhakti and vairagyam, the subjects were affected by that, by the king. And even they have reached that stage. And due to that, they were also experiencing the state of self-realization. Not only Ambarish, they were experiencing the state of self-realization. So, when self-realization comes to someone, anyone, it doesn't matter, all other happiness of the higher planets, like heavenly planets or the Tapolokam, Maharlokam, Janalokam, Satyalokam, and all that, or the happiness that you can get from those places will not be attractive anymore. This is one lesson to learn. That with self-realization, when you start experiencing the bliss of the soul from inside, the attraction for happiness that you may be thinking of the heavenly planets, Surgalokam, or Janalokam, Maharlokam, Tapolokam, Satyalokam, all these places, even that attraction will fade away from inside. So, therefore, Ambarish's subjects, his people, did not also lost interest going to heaven, going to Brahmalokam and all that, due to this reason, right? Because they were not attracted by that, because of the Antaryami's happiness, the self-realization, right? So, Atmananda Lahari, those who come to that level of self-realization and who are completely engaged in that, even Brahmalokam will not be an attraction for them, right? So, the happiness of Brahmalokam is compared to not even to a drop of happiness that comes from the soul, that comes from the soul. To such an extent, Ambarish has gone to that level. If the subjects were like this, you can imagine the situation with Ambarish then. If the subjects were not attracted to Brahmalokam, they were feeling the happiness of the soul from inside, imagine what should be the condition of Ambarish then, right? So, so all things in this world, material wealth, he considered it as asat, useless, right? So his happiness was purely coming from the soul, from Antaryami, right? So gradually he gave up everything, he became Ambarisha Mahabhaga, pure devotee, completely detached, Mahabhagavatam, and seeing Krishna's presence in everything, he has reached the higher stage of self-realization. But this is another interesting thing. Even though he reached that level, because he has come from bhakti side, his attachment for continuing that did not leave him. Upasana. Bhakti sadhana, he could not give up. Ambarish had this difficulty at that stage. Difficulty means that he has reached the highest stage of self-realization. He is experiencing the bliss or happiness of the soul, but still he wanted to continue his sadhana, upasana process, what he continued, right? So what does that mean? These are things to look at, to think about, right? Sometimes, even if you have reached the highest level of perfection in spiritual life, that means Advaita Siddhi, still this worshipping Krishna and engaging in Krishna's service, that desire may not leave you. Something to think about. Even when one has reached the highest stage of perfection in spiritual life, self-realization has happened to him. In spite of that, the attraction for continuing serving Krishna is not leaving him. He is finding some happiness from that. It is through that process he has reached there. So, but he is unable to give up this process, what he followed through. Right? And that is why Acharya Swamiji mentions this. Muktam abilileya vigraham krutva bhajande. That is the way he has put it. He has reached the state of mukti. Abilileya vigraham krutva bhajande. It is his leela, that devotee's leela, that he still wants to continue with the vigraha aradhana. Vigraham krutva bhajande. Muktam abilileya vigraham krutva bhajande. Right? So even if he has liberated, he has become free from the bodily attachment. You would have normally thought, after you become free from the bodily attachment and realize the self inside, why do you want to do it? Because this was done as a sadhana process. But because that process itself is so powerful, that even after liberation, he does not want to give it up. He wants to continue, right? So, now, so that is why they continued. So a perfected person, one who is reached that state of self-realization, if there is still prarabdham left in that, and he is left to live in this body, in this world, he won't be able to give it up. He will not give it up, right? So at that time what is happening is, from that Advaita realization, Advaita Bhavam, he is coming down. And then he wanted to develop this relationship, master and the servant, Savior Sevaka Bhavam, master and the servant. And he will continue that for some time, right? In this way, this Ambarish Maharaj, who was a great devotee and who was a very realized person, he decided to perform Dwadasha Aradhana for 1 year. That is how this decision he came up to. Because that attraction has not gone away, Prarabdham is not finished, the body is still there. So even though, so this is what the important thing to understand, that as long as we have completely given up this body, Prarabdham will catch us in some way at some time. If there is Shishta Prarabdham, they call it, something remnants left behind, and that will drag you back into your old life still. You can see that in many great personalities' life, that they have realized the truth, but Prarabdham is not finished. So they have to stay here in this world with that body. So while they are living like that, their vasanas, what was there before, that will still follow them. And therefore, in spite of the fact that he has reached that perfect realization, still he decided to go for this 1 year worship of Dwadashi Vratam, Mahadwadashi Vratam, to worship Krishna, even though he has reached the highest level of bhakti and jnanam, Ambarish Maharaj. And that is why from now on, it's all about that incident, what happened with Durvasava Maharshi and all that. So, this Ambarish Maharaj story, Ambarish's, so after showing this bhakti, ananya bhakti, and to show to us that in spite of all these things, because of his stage of bhakti, even Durvasa couldn't do anything with him. That is perfect. How perfect he was, right? So we saw there that the Ambarish was happy, glorifying Krishna. That's all he wanted, right? And due to Ambarish, his subjects also the same way, all of them, right? And he never desired even heavenly planets. Not only that, due to self-realization, even higher planets like Brahmalokam and all that, neither Ambarish wanted nor his subjects wanted. They didn't want to go to any of those places. We are people, if we are given heavenly planets, we'll be more than happy to go. Compare ourselves with that, with their state of consciousness. They have elevated themselves to such level that they didn't want even heavenly planets or even higher planets like Brahmalokam. Even that they have rejected. They said, we don't want all that, because already they are experiencing self-realization due to Ambarish Maharaj, right? So this state of consciousness, what Ambarish had, it is impossible to explain this through words, what was happening there in Ambarish's kingdom, right? But you can imagine what was that state of consciousness, right? In our imagination, if you think about material happiness, right? Whatever you can imagine, the highest level of material happiness, or its peak, is what is in Brahmalokam. Brahmalokam can offer you the highest level of happiness, right? Now, even in this life, those who worked very hard in spiritual life, and they could not realize it, the self, right? But he has advanced a lot spiritually, but he has not got the whole experience of the self. So such a person, what he will experience, in this world, what he gets from his spiritual life. Say, for example, someone who has taken to spiritual life very seriously and intensely followed all the Shastric injunctions and conducted his upasana very strongly, that person, he has not experienced self-realization, but due to his progress in spiritual path, what he has achieved, he will also get a little happiness, a very trace of that happiness from the self. He will also get it, right? But what happened was, before he could complete it, he died. That person died. He advanced a lot because he worked very hard, committed himself to spiritual life seriously, followed the Shastram injunctions, what Bhagavad Gita Bhagavatam is talking about, and he was completely focused on self-realization. He worked very hard, but he didn't make it. He couldn't realize the self. But in that path of progress, he will also experience a very trace of happiness from spiritual life, from self-realization. Meanwhile, he died. Meanwhile, he died. Right? So, when he die, what happens to him? For him is Krama Mukti. You remember? Krama Mukti and Sadhya Mukti. We talked about this in the second canto. In the beginning, Parikshit Maharaj asked that question. What is Sadhya Mukti? What is Krama Mukti? So, Krama Mukti is for that person who worked very hard in this life, advanced a lot, but couldn't realize the truth. Unfortunately, his prarabdham finished in this body and he died. But due to his intense work he has done, or intense bhakti, what he has cultivated here in this life, he was not doing anything else except spiritual life. He was completely, no sense gratification, no materialistic life, nothing. Completely surrendered to Krishna and was trying to cultivate self-realization, working very hard. He will also get some happiness of the self in this life before he dies, but not self-realization as such. Such a person, his path is Krama Mukti. Krama Mukti, right? That means Devayanam process. Remember all that, right? Krishna talks about in Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Bhagavatam. Sri Shukha Brahmashri mentions that in the Bhagavatam. You have to connect all these things together. Krishna talks about that in the Bhagavad Gita, about the process of Devayanam, Pitriyanam. He spoke there. Pitriyanam is for those people who did a lot of good things but didn't get very far. They'll have to come back here. There's no prarabdham left. So they go to Pitralogam and come back here. The ones who have worked very hard in spiritual life, they go through Devayanam. Pitriyanam means return ticket. Devayanam means one way. It's going up further. Second canto, you have to go back into second canto and study those verses. What Shukha Brahmashri told Parikshit. So, these people who have gone through Krama Mukti, through Devayanam process, they will get to Brahmalokam. And eventually, after a long period of time, they will get liberated. So, when he gets there, this person who has gone through Devayanam, he will experience a tremendous happiness in Brahmalokam. Right? And so when he is experiencing that, that happiness is what was spoken here in that verse. Swarajya Paribhavita. See that word? That covers all this thing. Swarajya Paribhavita. Right? So at that moment he said, that Durlabham Abhisiddhana Mugundam Hridi Pashyata. Right? So, someone who has realized the self and the happiness what he is experiencing here within his own heart, the bliss, that is also the same is the same. He has not gone to Brahmalokam, but he is here still. But he is experiencing it. So that means through Kramamukti you have reached Brahmalokam. Kramamukti, through Devayanam process, you have reached Brahmalokam. And you are experiencing the happiness of Brahmalokam there. Another person here who have realized the truth and is experiencing the happiness of the self here, but his prarabdham is not finished. The other one has finished the prarabdham and gone to Brahmalokam, and he is stuck there, and this person is stuck here through prarabdham. These are all different scenarios happens in devotee's life. Different persons. It is not one rule for all and one will all go together back and one will all stay there together and one will all come back together. It's not like that. It's individual, it is. Very much an individual thing. Right? So, one who is seeing Krishna within the heart, Antaryami realization here, and he is experiencing sitting here itself, is experiencing that happiness. And the person who has gone to Brahmalokam through Kramamukti and got there, and he is also experiencing the happiness there of the self-realization, but he is also not free to, he is also not finished his spiritual sadhana. That means his Brahmalokam also he is stuck there. Here he is stuck, one person is stuck here with self-realization but with prarabdham. Another person is stuck there in Brahmalokam with Kramamukti. Both are still in the process of final realization. So this happiness what this person is getting here while living in this world with prarabdham, but realized the state, and the Swarupanandam what he is getting, and the experience there in the Kramamukti level, what he has reached Brahmanandam in the Brahmalokam there, they are more or less the same thing, but only difference is this, that a person who is doing sadhana and when he has realized the truth here, he doesn't have to go to Brahmalokam. This person here who has realized it here, he doesn't have to go to Brahmalokam. So because he doesn't have to go to Brahmalokam means what? It means that his attraction for happiness of Brahmalokam has left him. You see, when we have a desire to go somewhere, why is that we want to go to some places? Because we have desire inside. Is it not? In this world also it's like that. Suppose you have desire to enjoy, you want to go to somewhere, that's because that desire is inside. That is what it is. You can't do anything about it. Why? Vedam says, Vasana Mayo Jivaha. Jiva is made of, Jiva means Vasana. Jiva is not different. Any Jiva if you take, Jiva's very nature is Vasana. Vasana is driving Jiva everywhere. And that is what is driving us also to all the places in this world. We will say it some other name. Oh, I'm going on a pilgrimage and all that. Or going on something else, whatever it may be, right? Parikrama or pilgrimage, this and that. We give all a cover-up like that. But it is the vasana inside that is driving him for that. Yeah. So, this person who is here, who has realized, but prarabdham not over, he is liberated, but he has no attraction for the bhoga sugam of Brahmalokam. So, Kramamukti and Sadhyamukti, main difference is this. Person in Kramamukti has some vasana still for bhoga sugam. So, therefore, he has to enjoy that in Brahmalokam. The Sadhyamukti person, he is liberated already, but his prarabdham is not finished, so he is stuck here. Right. So, so the one who lost desire to go to Brahmalokam, who lost the desire to go to Brahmalokam, he is the one who is called a Sadhyamukti. So, the point what he is making here is that this self-realization happens to someone. He will get partial happiness of the self, partially, bit by bit, right? Will come to him when he is progressing in this sadhana process. You see? So it's not that everything will be given only at the end. No. Things will be given to him as much as he is progressing in his spiritual life, prarabdham leaving him, and gradually that happiness of the self starts coming to him. Gradually it comes to him, right? So when experience, it is in that state that prarabdham for that particular body finishes, and then he goes in the Krama Mukti stage. So all these things don't happen in one day or one moment. It is a gradual thing that is going to happen to any person who is in the spiritual path. You remember Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, Shanai Shanai Ruparamet, do it slowly. It will all happen slowly. It all takes time. Nothing will happen overnight, right? So, so this one who has gone to Brahmalogam means, what it means is, through Krama Mukti means, he had the desire to enjoy life in the Brahmalokam. That desire was there in him, so he had to go through Krama Mukti process, right? So, what's happening here now in Ambarisha's case is that none of them wanted to go to Brahmalokam even. What does that indicate? It indicates that they were already in a very high state of self-realization, and most of them are staying on here due to prarabdham. To that level they have reached, ambitious subjects, right? So, therefore, bhoga sukham was not there, they had no interest. They had no interest in bhoga sukham. That means, they were not talking about economic development. Right? So, already they have reached such a state of consciousness that very, very close to self-realization, but in their state was such that, and they were experiencing Krishna within the heart, and these two things are not different. Which one? Fully self-realized person. Now think about it a little bit more. Fully self-realized soul and a person who is experiencing Krishna within the heart as his very self, they are not different. They are one and the same. So, that means they are experiencing Krishna within the heart as Antaryami. On the other hand, if you compare them with a fully self-realized soul, their state is not different, right? So, whatever it may be, Brahmalokam was not any attraction for them anymore, right? If it is like that, is the case, why they are talking about the subjects here, like this is, to tell us that if the subjects were like this, where is the question of Ambarish desiring going to Brahmalokam? That's the idea behind saying all these things. That subjects were not interested, what to talk about the king then? That's the reason behind that, right? So that means even the subjects were so liberated, right? And Ambarish's detachment, intense detachment, and complete feeling disgusted with sense gratification, this is what is shown in those two verses. Yeah? That is verse 24 and 25. Yeah? Surajya paribhavita. What is using there? Right? So, Ambarish was in that state, but in spite of that, he wanted to continue his spiritual activities, what he was practicing before, that what he practiced, right? This is the nature of a devotee. This is the nature of devotee. Even after liberation, Jivan Mukta stage they have reached, and even when they are experiencing the Swarupananda Lahari, identification with the body has gone from them, even in that stage, Still they want. That. What does that mean? It means that they have reached the state of Andaryami. They have lost their Jiva Bhavam, has gone from them. Is it not? Jiva Bhavam has gone. Identification with the body has gone. Now they are identifying with the Andaryami inside. And they have reached that state of consciousness. Even then, sometimes they want to come back and to continue with what they did in their devotional stage, in their devotional life. Why? Because they were, so from Advaitam, they come to Dvaitam sometimes, to engage in this, right? So, so that is the lehari or intoxication they had from bhajana, bhajanananda. So bhajanananda lehari can come to a devotee, even he is liberated, jivanmukta stage, right? This is a special nature of a devotee. It's only for the devotee, right? And Bhagavadam says, and Bhakti Shastrams also, and that is what was spoken as Muktanam Abhilaya Vigraham Kritva Bhajande. That Leelaya, just it is the Leela for them. It's not done like the way normally it is done, but they are liberated, they are self-realized, but still that happiness that they got from Savior Sevaka Bhav, Master and the Servant, that relationship with Krishna that way, they are finding it difficult to give it up. So sometimes they come down to Dvaitam, because that means Dvaitam. So Master and the Servant means Dvaitam, right? So it is there that Ambarish's stage, and that is what made him to go for the Dvadasha Vratam. Otherwise, a self-realized soul, normally you wouldn't expect him to engage in Dvadashi Vratam. Why did he go for Dvadashi Vratam? This is the reason behind it. So we'll discuss that after the break. Chedo darpanam arjanam baumaha davagni nirvabanam shreya kaidava chandriya vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam anandam budivardhanam pradipada purnamrita swadanam Sarvapna Swamanam Param Vijayade Shri Krishna Sankirtanam Namnama Gari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shakti Tatrarpida Nimida Smaranena Kala Eda Drishita Vakriba Bhagavan Mamabi Durdeva Midrashamiha Janinanuragaham Tranara Vishuni Jena Tharora Visahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtani Yasada Hari Nathanam najanam nasundarim kavidam va jagati shakamai mama janmani janmani shwari bhavadad bhakti rahai dugitvai ayi nandananu jakingaram padidamam shame bhavam budau krabayadava pada pangajasita duli sadrisham vichindaya nayanam galadashurdharaya vadanam gadgadarudhaya ghira pulagair nijidam kadavabu tavannamagrahane bhavishyadi Yugaidam Nimeshena Chakshusha Pravishaidam Shunyaidam Jagal Sarvam Govinda Virahenami Ashleshava Padaradam Pinashtumam Adarshanam Mahadam Karyotuva Yathatadava Vidadadulam Bhadu Malpranadha Sunayevana Para Sarvatra Govinda Nama Sankirtanam Govinda Govinda. After talking about Ambarish, about two things, his bhakti, ananya bhakti, as it is called here, ekanda bhakti, which means he had developed such strong attachment to saguna brahmam as well. Added to that, he had the nirgunam realization also. That is why both are shown in that. If you look at the siddhi, you will see here, sarvatma bhavam, is coming from Nirguna Brahmam realization. And at the same time, the Upasana process he followed was Sagunam. So therefore, both are in him, Sagunam as well as Nirgunam. And due to this bhakti what developed inside, in spite of this realization, he wanted to perform Dvadashi Vratam. In spite of all this. So that is why it is mentioned that sometimes people who have good bhakti vasana inside or who have performed bhakti sadhana, it will be difficult for them to pull out from that, even after realizing the truth. So that is why it was spoken that they come back and again serve Krishna as the master and the servant. That they don't want to give up that connections in that way, right? So, and his protection, Sudarshanam comes at that time, and that Dwadashi Vratam, it lasts for 1 year. He decided for 1 year to perform that, right? Strictly speaking, Ekadashi Vratam and Dwadashi Vratam, there is not of a big difference, huge difference, right? In Ekadashi Vratam, Vratam is more important. The fasting part of it is more important. This is a lot of astrological calculations involved in that. Ekadashi, after that comes Dwadashi, right? So, there is Ekadashi days where Dwadashi does not come in. Sometimes, say 3/4 or 4/5 of it is Ekadashi and the remaining is Dwadashi in a day. But sometimes what happens, whole day is full Ekadashi and Dwadashi comes the next day. So, Ekadashi, you take that part where Ekadashi is present. Ekadashi means that times when Ekadashi is influencing the moon. So after the Ekadashi, you have what is known, what we call as the breaking the fast, isn't it? Which is called in Shastram Parana. Parana means that. So those who follow Dwadashi Vratam, for them Ekadashi should not be there. For they give priority to Dwadashi more than the Ekadashi. For Ekadashi people, Ekadashi is more important. So when Dwadashi comes, not touched by Ekadashi, accordingly Ekadashi is calculated. So, and on the day of Dwadashi, before Dwadashi finishes, Parana has to happen. The breaking of the fast has to happen, right? And that is, they are very particular about that. They give rigidly, they follow that, right? So, what happens is, at the time of sunrise, if Dwadashi finishes, then there's only very few hours left, Dwadashi left at that time. Very few hours or sometimes few minutes left for Dwadashi, right? Or by the time sun rises, Dwadashi is finished. If it happens like that, they will have to, you see, the difficulty is this, that before Dwadashi Parana, what we call this breaking the fast, you have to finish your Nitya Karma, which means Sandhya Vandanam and all the other things, Agnihotram and all that. So for those who are rigidly following the Vedic injunctions, it's a lot for them to do. And they have to look at the timing as well. They are not like us, isn't it? Thinking about, we have to get to the factory at this and this time. And you have to work 8 hours. And our priority is in life is meeting the hours given to us by the factory management or our bosses, industry or business or finance or whatever it is. They control our life. That's not Vedic culture. Vedic culture was like this. For them, priority is Shastram. What Shastram says, Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Tasmal Shastram Pramanam De Karya Karya Vyavasthito. In everything, Shastram is the authority. Tasmal Shastram Pramanam De Karya Karya Vyavasthito. What is right and wrong, you have to decide based on Shastram, Krishna says, isn't it? Ye Shastra Vidimul Srajya Vartade Kama Karagat, another place in the Bhagavad Gita. And several places, Krishna will keep on saying this, the authority of the Shastram. Yeah. Anyway, so those who follow Ekadashi rigidly, they follow Ekadashi more important. Those who follow Dwadashi Vratam, for them the important is that they have to finish all their Nitya Karmam, Sandhya Vandanam, Agnihotram, everything before this Dwadashi Parana happens, right? So, so in that case, sometimes if the Dwadashi Parana time comes very close to the time of sunrise, what will you do? Because Sandhya Vandanam and all that has to be performed from before that. A few hours before that they have to start to finish it before the Parana time. So sometimes what happens is they may have to get up very early in the morning and could be even midnight. And they'll have to go to the river to bathe. This is what happened to Nanda Maharaj. You remember that night? It's not that Nanda Maharaj was not conscious of anything. He didn't look at the clock or watch and he went to the bathe in the river. That's not what happened. What happened was this. He had to break the Dwadashi Parana. For that, he had to get up early and finish everything. So he went in an inauspicious time to bathe, and Varuna's servants caught him and took him to Krishna's arrangement, that was. He was taken to Varuna's abode, and there all those things happened, right? So, so all the Sandhyavandanam and all other things has to be performed before sunrise, because Dwadashi will, Parana time has come, so they go in the middle of the night to the river, right? So, they went to Yamuna River to bathe, and that is when Varuna's servants came and caught hold of Nanda Maharaj. This is what happened to him. So the same thing applicable here, right? So, it's not that by mistake Nanda Maharaj didn't look at the watch properly and then he went to the river to bathe. That's not what happened. What happened was this, right? So, so, because the next day, by the time sun rises, Dwadashi finishes, right? So, that means at least 3-4 hours before Dwadashi finishes, he has to perform all his Sandhyavandanam and complete that and then perform his Dwadashi Parana. They strictly followed all that, right? And you can also see how strict Nanda Maharaj was. You remember he was caught for Shivaratri day. He went into the they decided to stay awake whole night for Shivaratri. And they were Ambiyavanam they went to. And all that what happened there. And the huge snake came and caught all of his feet. And Krishna came out and spoke to that Asura who did that, right? So you can see how serious they were about all these things in following the rules. They rigidly followed all that. What we do, what suits us, we will do. What doesn't suit us, we just leave it. This is how we are. And there's nothing we can do about it, right? So, Nanda Maharaj went at the midnight to perform bathe in the river because Dwadashi Parana was there next day. When the morning comes, the day comes, right? That's called ahasa. Ahasa is the word for that. So, ahasa, once ahasa comes, that means the day comes. Then immediately they'll have to bathe and it should finish with Dwadashi Parana. Before Dwadashi finishes, ahasa has come. So that means way before the ahasa begins, they'll have to finish the Sandhya Vandanam. That is the requirement, right? So, the morning, what you have to do, first thing is important is the Sandhyavandanam thing. Nitya karma, right? So, when Dwadashi is present, at that time to do the parana is, that is in Dwadashi Vratam, it's very important in Dwadashi Vratam, right? What that means is, for Dwadashi Vratam, Ekadashi day, you fast whole day. And that is important for Ekadashi Vratam, right? After that, you can perform the Parana, after the Ekadashi Vratam, right? And there is not special importance for that, more than that, right? When Ekadashi Vratam is performed, next day you can perform the Parana and your Ekadashi Vratam is over. So, our Ambarish Maharaj decided to perform Dwadashi Vratam in the river banks of Yamuna, Yamuna River, right? And therefore, Dashami, that is the day before Ekadashi, we are allowed to eat only once, one meal on that day. Dashami day, that means the day before Ekadashi, right? Ekadashi day, you are not allowed to eat anything. And on the Dwadashi day, you have to perform worship of Vishnu elaborately. And after that, after the offerings, everything to the deity, the naivedyam, what has been made, offer, that should be done. And then Brahmanas should have their feet washed. And then for those Brahmanas who had come, they should be given all the facilities for bathing properly. In them days, there were different things they used for bathing. Not shampoo and all that, what we have now. The whole thing is so different, right? They have their own things, what they will use in them days, right? So, and similarly after that, you have to give them dress as well. Fresh clothes should be given to them. Fresh food should be given to them. And after all, and they should be completely pleased. And Dakshina also. It's all a part of Dwadashi Vratam. Ekadashi doesn't require all these things. Dwadashi Vratam requires all these things. It's mandatory for Dwadashi service. Dwadashi Vratam, right? So, typically, you are expecting them as representatives of Vishnu. Vishnu's presence in them, and and seeing them as Vishnu's representative, those Brahmanas, it should be done. And after that only, Dwadashi Parana will happen. So that means there's a lot of things to be done before the Dwadashi Parana. Ekadashi Parana doesn't have that problem, that much. Dwadashi Parana is much more elaborate. So Ambarish Maharaj decided to do this Dwadashi Vratam in the banks of Yamuna and for a year. That's what he decided. So he did that for a year. And on the last Dwadashi, the last one of that year, which was in the month of Kartika, Kartik month, White Dwadashi, they call it. White Dwadashi means the Dwadashi that comes from the day, from the new moon day to full moon day, when you go, that's the white part of the Dwadashi. And full moon day to the new moon day, that 15 days, the Dwadashi that comes there is the dark one. So this was in the Kartik month, the White Dwadashi, the one from the new moon day to full moon day, the Dwadashi that comes that one. And because it was the last Dwadashi, he has arranged, and whatever Ambarish does will always be big scale. He likes to do it in a big way. So 1,000 kalasham, sahasra kalasham, was arranged for that. 1,000 pots with water and everything for Abhishek, everything. Very elaborate worship, right? And then the naivedyam offering of everything, preparations for him. And this washing the feet and things like that. And after all that, the other people who had come, ordinary people who are not worshipped as such, but for they were also given and pleased them with sufficient prasadam and clothes and dakshina, everything. Others were also given. So that's what you will find there. If you read through all those verses, from 29 onwards, you will see how he did that all that verses, right? And you will see there that in the verse, this has happened, this whole thing is like that. And you can see some things are spoken there. Brahmanas were fed well, and then cows which were decorated with gold and silver. Their horns were covered in gold and silver, and then their hooves were covered with silver, and then expensive clothes were given. 60 crores, that means 600 million cows, were donated in charity. 600 million cows, it says, to the best brahmanas, and they were sent to their homes. Brahmanas' wealth is the cows, isn't it? So, then what happened? Labdhakamairanityadam paranayopachakrame tasyapt arkhyadidhi sarchal durvasa bhagavan abhud. He fulfilled all their desires, and brahmanas were very pleased, and though now he thought everything is completed, so he decided to perform the parana. That parana means breaking the fast, what we say. Breaking the fast. What you take in to break Ekadashi, that's parana, right? Tarhi, Bhagavan Durvasa Tasya Adhidhi San Sakshad Abhud. Bhagavatam is saying, at that moment, Bhagavan Durvasa, see what is mentioned? Durvasa Bhagavan Abhud. Bhagavan Durvasa has come as a guest. You can see from there itself that this pastime is not to offend Durvasa Maharshi or not to minimize his position. This is a pastime. Krishna and Durvasa arranged it together to glorify Ambarish. Durvasa is playing that role for Krishna's sake, in order to glorify Ambarish. That's the way we have to see. We can't think any other way. To think bad about Durvasa means also wrong thing to do. Just like we saw with Shukracharya and Mahabali. Krishna's pastimes is what we are discussing. So, just like in order to glorify Mahabali, that pastime happened with Shukracharya and Krishna. That is how that Vamanavadaram and all that happened. Same way here, it is a pastime between Krishna and Durvasa Maharshi in order to glorify Ambarish. There it was to glorify Mahabali. Krishna and Shukracharya decided together. They have acted together. What do you say? Collusion, yeah. It's a collusion between... Collusion could be a little bit harsh to say. When Krishna does something, it won't be a... It's a mutual understanding they had, that they will do all this so that Mahabali is known to the world. Mahabali is bhakti. In order to glorify Mahabali, in other words. Similarly, in order to glorify Ambarish, this was done between Krishna and Durvasa Maharshi. So when you read through it, you can see straight away, first of all, introduction itself, Durvasa Bhagavan Abhud. Durvasa is not an ordinary person. Is it not? Krishna calls this my guru, he says, about Durvasa Maharshi. Remember Krishna and Rukmini, when they were in Dwarka once, Durvasa comes to see them. And Durvasa told both of them to cover both their bodies with sweet rice. This is in the Garga Bhagavatam, this story. They covered both of them with sweet rice. And both Krishna and Rukmini, Krishna told Rukmini, just listen what he says. Don't say anything against him. So, and then he said that you both stand there as two bulls for me. I want to travel in that chariot. So Krishna and Rukmini were become two bulls, and they had to pull the chariot, and Durvasa was sitting in the chariot comfortably. There are so many pastimes between Durvasa and Krishna like this. So Durvasa is not an ordinary person. It was not an ordinary person. This Lord Shiva's another form, that is, isn't it? So, moon, Dattatreya, moon from Brahma, Dattatreya from Vishnu, and Durvasa from Shiva. From between Atri and Anasuya. That's how they were born. Yeah.
So, Labdhagamairanityadam parana yopachakrami tasya tarhyadhiti sakshal durvasa bhagavan abhud.
So, Dwadashi was going to parana. Time has come. Everything was completed before that. At that time, Durvasa Maharshi arrives there on the scene with 10,000 disciples. Imagine, Durvasa comes there with 10,000 disciples. If we get one guest, we suffer. Look at his situation now, Ambarish says. 10,000 disciples, Durvasa comes in there. And so, and this person, Durvasa, he doesn't eat anything. That's how Durvarasam, that's what his food is. Some grass, he grinds it and take the juice from that. That is his food. That's his diet. And Durvasa Maharshi is like that, right? So, but this time he wants a feast with all the 10,000. Durvasa Maharshi is not wanting anything. He is Durvarasam, that is his food, right? So, but today he wanted with 10,000 disciples and he wanted a big feast. So, when you want a feast like that, what Durvasa will do is, all the rishis do this, they'll go to a very rich householder. Householders are the people who are supposed to look after them and provide them with a big feast, right? So they thought that Ambarish Maharaj is doing this, so they came there to him. And householder is supposed to feed them at any cost, it's his duty, right? So, so Durvasa Maharshi is so powerful, great tapasvi, great yogi, and great jnani. All these three things. Tapasvi, jnani, yogi. Right? And so, and normally when he goes around, he's like Jada Unmata Pishachavat. He looks like a ghost with all his matted hair and doesn't care for his clothes, big beard, and Jada Unmata Pishachavat. That is how Durvasa is spoken about. Right? So that it is that Durvasa had come as a guest, right? And liberated souls can travel like that. Bharata was like that, isn't it? Jada Bharata. Our, Rishabhadev was like that. They are liberated. So they have no identification with the body anymore. So they will travel like this with the grown matted hair and not clean body, soiled clothes, and they will wander around in this world, right? So, like a ghost, looks like a devil or ghost, you can say, right? They have reached that state of Jivanmukta state. Jivanmukta stage, they have come. So, therefore, due to that, they wander around in this world in the form of a ghost, and and at the same time, Unmadam. They will behave like mad. Sometimes they behave like a mad person. And that is how Durvasa was, right? So, he showed anger. Whenever he showed anger, it has benefited people. He never went wrong in any time. Remember what happened? He went to the heavenly planets, and that women from the heavenly planets, they made the garland. And when they saw Durvasa coming, what did they do? They went and put the garland to him, on him, and handed over to him and offered obeisances to him so that he doesn't cause any problem for them. And Durvasa took the garland and did not do any problem for them. He went and then he gave it to Indra. And Indra made the big mess of it, the whole thing. His elephant, Airavatam. And with the result, what happened? Durvasa cursed them. And the whole heavenly planets, everybody became old age and diseased completely. That's how Durvasa's power to talk about, right? So, he says here, Durvasa, when he came, Ambarish Maharaj offered obeisances and respected him. And
he realized that the time is running out. Parana time has come for Dwadashi Vratam. So now the Rishi has come. You can't do that till they come and they are fed properly and offered all the respects. So what he did was, Ambarish told Durvasa Maharshi that please go and bathe. That's a normal custom. You bathe and then come back and then prasadam will be ready for you, right? So he pleaded, begged to Durvasa Maharshi to go quickly and finish bathing and come back, right? Durvasa Maharshi with the disciples, all his disciples, went to the river, right? Finished the bathing. And then after bathing, standing in the water, they have to perform so many other things. Their Gayatri chanting and all other things related with that. So that was going on. Ambarish was waiting here. He didn't know when he's going to come back, and time was running out, right? So if you do not perform the prarana before the vratam finishes, that means the benefit of the vratam is gone. So this 1 year he has done this properly, and this is the last one. And if it's going to become like this, he was feeling very upset about it. Who? Ambarish, right? So if you finish the parana without feeding Durvasa Maharshi and the disciples, then that will cause problems, right? That means that it will be a big offense, very big offense it is considered to be, before they are fed, before doing the parana. And you finished your, suppose you invited a guest, and you say, guest was getting late, so you say, oh, I'll have my dinner. And then when the guest comes, so your food is ready here. That's our way of doing it. But that's not the system. System was that if Durvasa come to know that you have eaten before he has arrived, he could say anything and that's the end of the story, right? So, and that is called the Mahadadikrama. That is the word for that. Mahalpas, if you offend them, this is an offense, serious offense, very serious offense. It is called Mahadadikrama. That means you did something which is breaking the rule. Yeah. So, Ambarish was thinking, without Mahadadikramam, how can I continue with the parana? What to do? Without Mahadadikramam, what to do about it? Right? So he talked to his other brahmanas who were present there, who had knowledge of the shastram, and they could not find any solution to the problem straight away. Right? You remember in Mahabali's case, Krishna said to Mahabali, Rekshishe sarvadohantam sanyugam samarichadam sada sannihidam veera. There is a verse there, right? So, Krishna said that to Mahabali. That was not only for Mahabali. It applies to all devotees, right? And that is Krishna's word for devotees, right? In all devotees, especially those like Mahabali, who have completely surrendered, like Ambarish, it is for them that verse is. It's not only exclusively for Mahabali. You remember that verse. Rekshishe sarvadohantam sanyugam sabarichadam sada sannihidam veera. It says to Mahabali, isn't it? So that verse. So those who have performed Alpanivedanam, fully surrendered, like Mahabali, is Ambarish also. Right? So it is for them that verse is for them, right? And somehow Krishna can protect one in many different ways, his devotees. He can protect them in many different ways. Either he can appear in front of them and protect them, or Krishna can tell them in some form, a voice from the sky, Ashariri, can come and protect them from that, right? So Ambarish is in a what do you say, is in a situation now, does not know what to do. The Brahmanas could not tell him what's the solution to the problem. Durvasa Maharshi won't come back now. Time is running out. And before the time finishes, Parna has to be completed. Otherwise, the whole year's Dwadashi Vratam goes into wasted. It becomes as though he couldn't perform it fully, properly. Right? So, Krishna can protect the devotee in many different ways. Either he can come directly and protect him, or and tell him what you should do. Now, Brahmanas could not give any advice to him. It can come as a voice from the sky. Or, if neither of these two, third option is, from inside, as Antaryami, he can tell Ambarish to do what to do. And that's what has happened. Nobody could give him any proper advice, but ultimately Antaryami told him from inside, gave the advice to him that you can break the fast with water. So, Tirtham, what was offered to the for Abhishek and all that Tirtham, if you do that, there is a clause in the Shastram that Mahadadikramam won't happen. Mahadadikramam won't happen. If you break the fast with the Tirtham from the Abhishekam, if you take it, and this has come to him as an instruction from inside, from Antaryami, who gave this instruction to him. So, when he got that instruction, this is how Krishna's protection is. Krishna can protect directly, or Krishna can protect as Ashariri from the sky. Like in the case of Vasudeva and Devaki, that's what happened. Is it not? So, Krishna has different ways of protecting the devotees. So here, he told him that to take that Abhishega Tirtham and perform the Parana, and that will be considered as you have performed the Parana, if you take the water from the Tirtham, right? So, Brahmana Adhikramam, Brahmana Adhikramam also it's called, is not enough to save, to can take this water from the Abhishekam, Padatirtham, right? There is a problem there. What it is water is not considered to be food. To break the fast, you have to take food, something, not water, right? But when you complete a vratam like this, Dwadashi Vratam, can the water be considered as food, right? That the people who are present there, they have told him, it can be considered as a food. So that aspect of it, from inside Antaryami, Krishna gave the instruction to take the water. And the people who are present there, they said that consuming Tirtham is good enough. It can be considered as food. And they said it is good enough for this. And that is how it was concluded, right? So with their approval, he took that Tirtham and finished the Parana, right? And then waited for Durvasav to come, because the time expired now, and waited for Durvasav to come. Durvasav comes at his own time, with all his disciples, after their bathing, elaborate bathing in the river, and everything. And then they came to perform Parana, everything. And our Ambarish Maharaj invited Durvasa Maharshi to come and sit on the throne for washing the feet, right? At that moment, Durvasa asked Ambarish, have you finished, what has happened to you? Have you finished the Parana? He asked this question. Ambarish had to say, yes, we have done that, right? Durvasa knew all these things because he is a great yogi, isn't it? And he can see so many things. So immediately he changed his nature. Durvasa's nature changed, right? And he started abusing him. He says to him, you think that you are a great devotee of Vishnu, don't you? He said, and you have invited me, a Brahmana, here, and by the time I finish my bathing and come back, you have performed a Parana and you have finished your Advadashi Vratam also. And in this way, I know what I have to do, what you have done, he said. So, Mahadadikramam has happened in Durvasa's eyes, right? And I'm going to give you a punishment, he said. Saying this, from his jada, he pulled out a hair and beat that on the ground, and from there a form appeared, and that's what you will find there in the in the verse 46. Evam bruvana mulkritya jadam roshavidipita taya sanarmame tasmai krityam kala analopamam. Durvasa, with his anger, he pulled this hair, jada, and from there he created this huge fire-looking, what is called kritya. Kritya came out from that hair. Tam abadandim jaladim asihastam padabhuvam vebayandim samudvikshya na chachala padan nrupa. That is the most important word there. Tam abadandim jaladim asihastam padabhuvam bhava vebayandim samudvikshya na chachala padan nrupa. Kritya was burning with the heat and had a sword in the hand, and with the feet, the whole earth planet was feeling the pressure from her. After seeing that form, Kritya, Ambarish did not move an inch from where he stood, right? He was not affected at all. He didn't get frightened, he didn't move from here, right? She is what we call here as the that the Nurmame Krityan Kalan Alapomamam. Alopamam. Kalan Alopamam. That he is like a fire, he has come, Analopamam, and Jadam Roshavidibida. That it is a form of the Abhijara Vritti. That means the intention to destroy someone. Ambarish Maharaj stood there and simply thought about Krishna, allowing Krishna to decide whatever want to happen, right? So Ambarish says there, I wanted to worship you for a year with this Dwadashi Vratam, right? You have fulfilled that desire, and I offer my obeisances for your mercy, what you have shown, right? Now at the end of this Dwadashi Vratam, if this is your desire that I should be destroyed by this kritya which has been sent by Durvasa Maharshi, and I will accept that happily. Just like Mahabali saying that Almanivedanam, able to surrender to Krishna like this. Ambarish had the same nature, right? So he says that if you think that I should become the food for this kritya, if that's what you want, I'm more than happy to be like that, right? Anyway, one day we have to die. And if your decision is that I have to leave this body in this way, I don't have any complaint about it. Ambarish is saying to Krishna, right? And I'm ready for that. And saying this, he stood there and thinking that kritya is going to attack him. And he was standing there. So almost the kritya got so close to him and was going to get him inside. Before that, from Ambarish, a powerful force came out, Sudarshanam. But how Sudarshanam appeared is not spoken in the Bhagavatam, how he appeared, right? You have to remember that at that moment, Sudarshanam was present there next to Ambarish, right? As though thousands of suns have appeared in the sky with such a powerful illumination, right, that Sudarshanam appeared at that moment, right? And Sudarshanam swallowed this kritya inside. And then Sudarshanam sent the kritya to the person who sent it. At that time, only then, at least at that moment, Durvasava understood Ambarish Maharaj's position, how powerful he was, right? And initially, Durvasava didn't know that Ambarish Maharaj is under the protection of Sudarshanam. He didn't know that, right? But when Sudarshanam turned towards Durvasava Maharshi, he realized that how powerful Ambarish is, right? So, what is Sudarshanam? That's the question. Sudarshanam, you remember the disc in the hand, Vishnu's disc, right? All the four discs, four things, conchal disc, lotus flower and the club, in the Tantram, we have spoken what they are, right? So, he is representing time, Kalam. Kala Chakram it is, Sudarshanam. So, if somebody is attacked by Kalam, time, he cannot stay anymore. We are all under the influence of time, isn't it? He will come and take us also one day. But we don't know Sudarshanam, so we don't bother. We are what we are. We will cry a lot, and then we will go for the funeral, and then we will do all the other things for the departed soul, and then we will go home thinking as though nothing has happened. This won't happen to me. This happened for him, some mistake has happened, that's why. Thinking like that, we'll go back and we'll continue doing the same thing what we are doing now. And that's how we are, right? So here, what happened was that Durvasava Maharshi could not stand that. And he started running. And he couldn't find anywhere where to go, right? Wherever you go, Sudarshanam is at the back. Durvasava kept running, right? Look at the verse 51. Dvishona nabhashmam vivaran samudran, where all he ran. Lokan sapalam tridivam gadasa yato yato dhavadi tatra tatra sudarshanam dushprasaham dadarsham. He ran in all directions, in the higher earth plane planet, lower planetary systems, oceans, and everywhere, wherever, even the heavenly planets, wherever he ran, Sudarshanam is behind, right? See, yada yada dhavadi tatra tatra dushprasaham sudarshanam dadarsha. Wherever he ran, there all he found Sudarshanam with its powerful heat. He was following him, right? So, he went and took shelter in some caves. It didn't work. In the oceans and in the atmosphere, heavenly planets and higher planets, even Brahmalokam he went. And Sudarshanam was behind him, right? He went there and fell at Brahma's feet. Alabdhanadha, 52. Alabdhanadha sayada kutaschil sandrasya chitto araname shamana devam virinjam samagad vidhadha trahyatmayoni ajida jeja somam. He fell down at Brahma's feet and told him, Brahma, you are the creator, and this Sudarshanam is behind me, protect me, he said. Right. So at that time, Brahma told them that sthanam madiyam saha vishwamedat kredavasane dhubarardasam yem brubhanga matrena hi samdhidaksho kalalpmano yasya tiro bhavishyati aham bhavo dakshabrghu pradhana prajesha bhudesha suresha mukhya sarveva yam yam yamam prabannaha murdhanya arpidam lokahidam vahama. He says, my planet, including Brahmalokam, and this whole universe, Brahmandam, my creation, and all the causes of creation, material nature, all these things, when my lifespan is over, which is normally referred to Dvaparardham. Brahma's life is 100 years, right? 50 years is over now for current Brahma. We are in the second half of Brahma's life. That is called the second parardham. Parardham means dviparardham. First 50 years, second 50 years. First 50 years is over. We are on the second 50 years. After that, my life is over. Oh, Brahma's life. Brahma also has to leave his body. Right? Even that is my lifespan. Even that is not important because it depends on the movement of the eyelashes of Vishnu. In other words, that is how it's spoken in the Puranam. Puranam way of saying is like that. That by the time he moves the eyelashes, a lifespan of Brahma is over. So, that's what he's saying here. And after that, devastation happens, the whole creation goes away. So, Mahavishnu's eyelashes moves at that time. That means movement of time happens. Then, look at that verse. Even they, me, Brahma says, me, Lord Shiva, Mahadeva, and all the Prajapatis, Indra, all of them follow his rules, Krishna's rules, right? And we accept his instructions with heads down, bowing down. And in whom we take complete shelter, bowing down in front of him, and whose instructions we take it very seriously and fully comply with it and live according to that, and we are not in a position to disobey him. That's what Brahma said, referring to Sudarshanam. This Sudarshanam is nobody else than his representative who had come here, right? So, therefore, this Sudarshanam, the Sudarshanam's effect, right? We cannot save you from this problem, right? Because we will also die. Sudarshanam is time. Kala Chakram, isn't it? This time person is representation of time. Sudarshanam, the chakram disk in the tantra margam. When Vishnu's form is created in the 12th canto, 11th chapter, you will see there that this Sudarshanam represents time. Time is Kala Chakram, the wheel of time, right? So here, Brahma is saying here, we are also under its influence, under its control. Lord Brahma also, right? And my lifespan is dviparardham, two parardham. And after that, I have to hand over Brahmalokam. Everything disappears. Even Brahmalokam goes away after that. And this Sudarshanam will swallow me, Brahmalokam, and the whole universe will go under its control, right? It will all be turned into ashes, right? And in short, he is saying that all of us are under the control of this Sudarshanam. And we also follow rigidly the rules laid by Sudarshanam, right? So, and whatever instructions Sudarshanam gives us, we follow that because we are under his control. Because he represents time. He is time personified, right? And we are the servants and he is the master. Servants cannot dictate to the master what to do, right? So I am not in a position to say anything to Sudarshanam, said Brahma. I am not in a position to say anything, right? And if I say something to Sudarshanam on my own, I will be swallowed by Sudarshanam and that will be the end of it, right? So I don't want that to happen. Therefore, for the protection of the Brahmalokam, he told Durvasa Maharshi, please leave this place, don't stay here. He said this to, Lord Brahma said this to Durvasa Maharshi, right? Then Durvasa go to Kailasam to see Lord Shiva there, right? And what Lord Shiva said is the next verse. In the 56th verse, you can see. Shri Rudra Vacha, the verse earlier, 53 and 54, Brahma Vacha, Brahma spoke. 56 is Rudra Vacha. What does Rudra say? Rudra says, Vayam natatha prabhavama bhumni yasmin pare anyepyaja jiva koshaha bhavandi kalena bhavandihi drisha sahasrasho yatravayam brahmamam. Lord Shiva says to him that I won't be able to do anything about it. For every universe there is a Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. That is the calculations, right? And this particular universe, we are responsible, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva. Similarly, there are billions and trillions of universes, and which you have seen in Lord Brahma's prayers. From every pores of the hair, universes are coming out, right? And it is come from Krishna's body like that, and it stays like that, and it disappears. Billions and trillions of universes. Nobody knows how many of them are there, and nobody can calculate that, right? So, in so many trillions of universes, in one universe, I am one Rudra form. I have it here, right? Then he says that, Aham Sanat Kumarascha Narado Bhagavan Aja Kabilo Abandara Tamas Devalo Dharma Asuri Mariji Pramugascha Anye Siddhesha Paradarshina Vidamana Vayam Sarve Yen Maya Mayaya Vrada Tasya Visheshara Sedam Shastram Durvishaham Hina Tameva Sharanam Yahi Haristesham Vidhasedi. He says to him, me, Lord Shiva says, me, Sanat Kumara Maharshi, Narada Maharshi, Lord Brahma, Kabila Maharshi, Abandra Tamasa, Devara Maharshi, Asuri, all these great personalities, even we don't know the end of the glories of Krishna, Krishna's glories, right? Because there is no end to it. Nobody can see it, nobody can know it, nobody can talk about it. How great Krishna is, right? So, not only that, they say, even Krishna doesn't know himself the end of his glories. That's how it is. Yeah, that is to say that Krishna's greatness or glories is difficult to put it through words. And great personalities like Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Sanat Kumar and all, even they don't know how to glorify Krishna completely. It's not possible, right? So, why do we say like that? Because when we say that Krishna also doesn't know, what it means is that the power of Maya, Maya Prabhavam, right? Because all this creation, trillions of universes and all, is coming from Maya. So, Prabhavam of Maya, Maya's power is beyond our understanding. You will never understand how powerful Maya is. In order to get that point across, it's spoken in this way. To make us aware, power of Maya is so big that it's impossible to understand Maya, right? So, because if something has got an end or a limit, only then you can say it finishes here. But Maya's power is such, all this whole magic is done through Maya, is it not? Krishna's Maya is this magic. Krishna's Maya is doing this magic called creation. Billions and trillions of universes, and in each of these universes there is Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. They are all through Maya it is coming, is it not? After all, Mayas are also based on the three modes of nature. So imagine the power of Maya, that these trillions of universes, trillions of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, and all of them is operating through Maya. And therefore, it is impossible for us to know how big the Maya is. Nobody can explain that, he says. So, that is what it is saying there in that. Yeah. Tasya visheshara syedam shastram durvishaham hina. In the previous verse it says, vidamana vayam sarve yen maya mayaya vrida. Maya's power, that is. En Maya, Mayaya Vrida. all of us are covered by Maya. Right? Tasya visheshrasyedam shastram druvishakimina tameva sharanam yahi haristesham vidhasyadhi. He said. So, it is that Mahaprabhu who is doing all these things through Maya, is the Sudarshanam is his. Right? And nobody can protect you from this. Lord Shiva said this to Durvasava Maharshi, right? So, best thing to do now, he said, who owns this Sudarshanam? Go to him, right? And so, Brahma had sent him, I have nothing I can do about it, he said. But Lord Shiva didn't say like that. Lord Shiva gave him a little bit more, better guidance than Brahma. What was that? Because he is Jagat Guru, isn't it? Guru Bhavam is Lord Shiva. So he said to Durvasav, the right thing to do for you now is go to that person who sent this to you, who owns this Sudarshanam, and take his shelter. This is Shiva's advice, Rudra's advice, right? Why we say Guru Bhavam? Because Guru means he should have the capacity to find a way out, shelter. That is Guru, isn't it? One who is able to give shelter. So that Guru Bhavam is in him, in Shiva. And he has got that responsibility to do that. And Durvasa Maharshi has taken shelter of Shiva. So Shiva gave him this advice. Go to him, right? So, and he will give you what you should, he will tell you what you should do, he said. And they also so told him, even if you go there, you won't get shelter, but he will tell you what to do, he said, like that. And with that, you will feel relieved from this problem. This is how Lord Shiva gave the advice, right? So that's what you see there in the 60th verse. Tato nirasho durvasa padam bhagavato yayav vigundhakyam yadadhyaste srinivasa shriyasaha. So, went to Brahmalokam, didn't work. Went to Kailasam also, didn't work. But this advice was a big thing. So he went to Vaikuntham to see Narayana there. Right? So there he gets to Vaikuntham, and what happened in Vaikuntham? That's the next verses. Sandahyamano ajida shastravanina talpadamule patida save padho aha achyudananda sadipsida prabho kridaga sammavahi vishwabhavana. When Durvasa Maharshi arrived in Vaikuntham, this is what he spoke. Achyuda Ananda Sadipsida Prabho Kridaga Sammavahi Vishwabhavana. O protector of the devotees, one with unlimited glories, Bhakta Priya, devotion, devotees, darling, and one who is capable of giving happiness to this world, even though I have committed a serious offense, please protect me. This way, Durvasa Maharshi spoke. Right? So, at this moment, Sudarshanam is burning his body. Sudarshanam is heat, excessive heat. It's burning his body. And unable to bear that heat, he fell on the feet. And so, Durvasa Maharshi says this, that for you, glorifying Adishesha also, Anandamurti, that you don't have beginning or the end, and Achyudamurti, one who does not have Ananda Prabhavam, unlimited Prabhavam, and Mahanubhava, Mahatmas who take shelter, please forgive me. And he kept saying this, apologizing to Vishnu at that moment. Ajanadade paramanubhavam kridam mayakam bhavada priyanam videhidasyavajidim vidhatar muchyedayan namnibide naragopi. He said that without knowing your position, your glories, or your greatness, I didn't know this, and I have committed this offense to your devotee, said Durvasa Maharshi. Right? So, I've committed an offense now. Tell me what I have to do, he said. What is the prayaschitam, atonement for that? If you think that if you offend a devotee, there is no atonement for that. If it is like that, one who chants the holy name, again glorifying the holy name here, if you chant the holy name, you won't go to hell, isn't it? Or even if you have gone to hell, you will get liberated even in the hell. That's what Shastram says. Shastram says like that, right? So, because it is like that, that by chanting your holy name, even if you have fallen into hellish planet, hellish conditions, you can still get liberated from that, provided you chant the holy name, right? So powerful is your holy name, so therefore you shouldn't have a problem in saving me. Durvasa said this to Mahavishnu, Vaikuntha Narayana, you can say, to Narayana and Vaikuntham, right? So, I have committed this offense to your devotee, and that's what the problem is, right? And ask for forgiveness, and as he said, even if one is lying in the hellish planets, if he chants the holy name, he gets liberated. So, however great the offense I have committed, this is the argument, right? Durvasa argument. However great the offense is, my distress should go now, because I have come and taken your shelter, and you are chanting your holy name. So, Aha, Achyuta, Ananda, these are holy names. Parīpsadi ipsita prabho kṛdāgasam māvahi viśvabhāvanā. Having chanted the holy name, I should be protected, shouldn't I? It is with that mood he has spoken that, right? So, this becomes an issue now. You know why? If holy name is that powerful, right, there is always an issue now. He should have been protected, but he was not protected. Even after chanting the holy name. Not trying to minimize the holy name's importance. Try to understand how in this ambitious pastime, how far the importance of holy name goes. Right? If you chant the holy name, he has chanted the holy name. We saw earlier in Ajamila's case, he chanted the holy name and Krishna protected him. Here, he has chanted the holy name and asked for protection. Achyuta Ananda, he chanted. And he said that even when one has gone to hellish planets, they get protected by chanting the holy name. So should I not be protected? Krishna says no. You see, Krishna says no. You may have chanted the holy name, but you are not protected. So what did he say? Ajanadati paramanubhavam kridam mayakam bhavada priyanam videhi tasyabajitim vidhadar mucheda yannam yudide naragopi. I have committed a great offense of offending your devotee. And for that, even chanting the holy name is not good enough. This is the verdict from Ambarisha's story. If you commit offense to a great personality, great devotee particularly, this is why they say that even if somebody whom you don't know, whether he is a devotee or not, best thing is not to offend anybody. But if an offense happens, you have to think, especially with great personalities, even chanting the holy name can't protect you. Holy name cannot protect you. Even if you chant the holy name, because it is considered to be such a heavy offense, offending a devotee, like Ambarish, like Mahabali or whoever, they may be, right? So that is a lesson to learn here in this Leela. So, look at the reply from Krishna, Mahavishnu's reply. Shri Bhagavanu Vacha, Aham Bhakta Paradino, Aswadandra Mivadvija, Sadhubir Grastha Hridayo, Bhakteir Bhakta Jana Priya. He says that, Durvasa Maharshi, I am a person who is completely under the control of devotees. Devotees control me. Aham bhakta paradhinam, he says. Asurandram ivadvija. I have no freedom to do anything. I can't make any decision. Why? Sadhubir grastha hrudayo. Sadhus, the devotees, they hold me in their heart. Bhaktair bhakta janapriya. Similarly, I have such an attachment for the devotees. And therefore, I am also not independent. I am also not independent. I am helpless, says Narayana to Ambarish, right? So one thing to understand here is that you have committed some offense, he says, that two great personalities, both great devotees, right? They have a difference of opinion, right? One says, this Mahadadikramam, committing offense to a Mahatma, can be destroyed by chanting the holy name. One who has such a strong faith in the holy name, right? The other person, they are both great devotees. They are arguing each other about this. Mahabhagavata says, they are saying that Mahadadikramam cannot be, counteracted by holy name. Holy name is not powerful enough to do that. So, the pramanam, the authority for that is this pastime. Durvasava Maharshi went to Krishna or to Narayana in the Vaikuntham and he chanted the holy name. Right? There you can see Ahachyudananda Sadipsita Prabho Kridagasam Mahavi Vishabhavanam. Right? And he asked for forgiveness. Right? It didn't work. Right? So, prior to that, so he went to Brahma, he went to Shiva. Shiva gave him the guidance, you get rid of this problem only by going to the person who owns Sudarshanam. He only can control Sudarshanam, he said. So he went to Sudarshanam, he went to Narayana, who owns the disc, the time. So there he goes and says to Narayana that, I have committed this offense to your devotee, I apologize for that, and even by chanting your holy name, I should be relieved from that. But Narayana told him, I cannot do anything about it. That's what he said here. Aham bhakta paradhino asodandram ivadvija. I also can't help, he said. Sadhubir grasa hridayo bhaktair bhakta janapriya. Saying that, so, one thing is very clear now. This particular thing, offending a great devotee, which is called the Mahadadikramam. Mahadadikramam, Mahada means great personalities. That can be a jnani or a yogi or a devotee. They are all Mahatmas, isn't it? Mahadadikramam, or the rishi, all of them, or the great devotee like Ambarish, they are all Mahatmas, right? So, Mahadadikramam, excluding that, everything else with the holy name you can get rid of. If you chant the holy name, you will be released from that, the reaction from that. All any other offense in this world, if you commit, the reaction from that, you will be released from that if you chant the holy name. That is the shastram, right? So, that is the siddhantam, right? But this Mahadadikramam, if it happens, the only way you can become free from that is to go to the person to whom you have committed the offense. And if he forgives you, you can become free from the reaction. That is the important thing to learn from this, right? So, that is what has happened to Ambarish's case. But this law is also abused sometimes by some people. They will say that they are all in that category, Ambarish's category. And if you offend that, if you say something that you committed offense, that But we don't take it that way. Yeah? You have to look at it in the background of where it has happened, whom it has happened, right? So, such a person, but before getting to that stage of going to the person whom you offended and asking for forgiveness, you have to chant the holy name and please Krishna. If you do that, then this Mahatma whom you have offended, he will feel compassion for you. So holy name is not lost its power there. By chanting the holy name, if you please Krishna, and Krishna gives the permission to the devotee whom you have offended, in that case that devotee will give you will accept your apologies and he will forgive you, right? Only then he will say, so that means you need to chant the holy name before you go to Krishna, and if you have chanted the holy name, Krishna will inspire that devotee whom you have offended, or Mahatma whom you have offended, and he will forgive you. This is how that system works. So holy name is not excluded. Holy name has a role in that, but ultimately release from that curse will only come from the devotee whom you have offended. Krishna won't forgive you, that person will forgive you. And in that case, you will become free from that. Till then, you will have to suffer from that reaction of what you have done. Right? So this Mahadadikramam is one important thing in the Bhagavatam. It is saying this, right? Because the suffering from that is really hellish, extreme hellish conditions can come from that. So that means the distress that will come from that cannot be cured by any other means, right? Only with the prasadam, by placing that pure devotee or Mahatma whom you have offended, and only by his mercy you will become free. But before that happens, you have to please Krishna through the holy name, and Krishna, in order to protect you, he will direct the devotee to release you from the curse. And that is how you become free from the curse. So that is how, where it is, right? So that is why we will stop there today and we will finish that in the next Saturday. Aham bhakta paradhino aswadandra mivadvijaha sadubir grasa hridayo bhakteer bhaktajana priyaha. Krishna's firm words on his relationship with the devotees. You will see this in the Bhagavatam every time. He says to Uddhava also in the same way, Niravesha munim shandam, nirvairam samadarshanam, anubrajamyaham nityam, uyeye tyangri renubhi. All these verses are to show to us that how Krishna takes his devotees so seriously. A great devotee. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki.